It's business time, baby.
The Sala Monster sounds off.
My client,
Mama Monster,
conquered the street.
We like fighting a woman.
There's nothing about Monday Night Raw that is fun.
Come over here and fight me.
Delete.
You haven't been beat up properly. Woo!
Happy Memorial Day, everybody. This is episode 601. A very special episode of the Sala Monster Sounds Off here for Memorial Day 2019. It is Monday, May 27th. This is your Double or Nothing review. The unofficial start of summer. Here is Memorial Day. And so I didn't want to let a week go by without doing any show, because that would suck. And I've already heard from a lot of you guys who were very upset to not see a new podcast yesterday, so I apologize for that. But I was en route back to New York from Las Vegas, a very nice, long Las Vegas weekend. And I'm going to talk a little bit about that here in a second, not just Double or Nothing, but all of the events of the weekend, all the people I had a chance to meet. Had a lot of fun, kind of depressed now that I had to come home, but you know how it goes. We are very, very, very close, in case you didn't notice, to 50,000 subs here on this channel. I think we're sub, 200? I think under 200 left to hit 50K. So if you are listening to this right now, I'd appreciate the hell out of it if you did hit that sub button. That way when we go live unexpectedly like this, or new content gets posted to the channel, you will be the first to be made aware of it, so hit that sub button. Also, let me just remind everybody who is listening live in the chat that Super Chats are enabled. So if you would like to donate live, you do have the ability to do so. So just a little FYI there. So Super Chats are open. I also want to give a shout out to our PayPal VIPs. I don't want to leave these guys out. They did make a contribution this past week, and I don't want this week to go by without acknowledging them. So I want to give a shout out to the Portland pop star, Paul Hamilton, John Loose Cannon Lopez, the Florida Freebird Brian Becerra, Beast Mode Brock Joseph, the Malaysian Mastermind Samuel T, the Chicago Slayer Willie Eichard, we've got the Anarchist Andrew Heller, Stephen Handyman Halistic, the Reno Renegade Wayne Ashanti, Luis, the Belmont Sentinel Alejandro, Caleb Blackout Brinkman, Recon Russell Bullware, the Diamond Dallas Dance Machine Harrison Soep, the Joker James Reed, the Bangkok Bandit Nipit, Vermitikal, Grizzly Gary Brown, and at Clay601 on Twitter and Instagram. Thank you, brother. Las Vegas. So let's talk a little bit about Vegas here. StarCast, big weekend, all the wrestlers, wrestling fans descending upon Vegas. And we were staying over at the Hard Rock Hotel, which we were not aware the Hard Rock apparently is going to be no more. At the end of this year. And I don't know how many years it's been there for. Hard Rock is I mean, it's like an institution. It's been embedded there for so long. And we heard from a bunch of different people who said that, yeah, at the end of this year, they're going to be closing down the Hard Rock, and they're going to be renovating it, and they're going to be rebranding it. It's turning into a Virgin Hotel, you know, which is the perfect wrestling hotel for wrestling fans. But, yeah, they're going to be shutting down for about 6 months and rebranding. And so it felt like the end of an era, staying there at that hotel. But I hit up StarCast. I did not have any plans going into StarCast. I just wanted to walk around. I missed the first one in Chicago in September. I heard great things about it. I know Conrad was busting his ass to come up with all different types of unique panels and attractions and stuff, and we even had a conversation about it. So I definitely wanted to make sure I hit up StarCast this time. And, you know, in a lot of ways, it's just sort of a giant version of what you would expect from, like, a WrestleCon. But they have some cool panels, and they have, you know, like the old WCW Saturday night backdrop, and you can take photos in front of it and all that kind of stuff. Dean Malenko was one of the many talents who had a table at StarCast, and he was in the news because it was announced that he is officially on board. Dean Malenko is All Elite. He has signed on to become an agent, a producer, whatever his official title is. He is now working for AEW, and he looked very excited. I think I might have actually seen him crack half a smile, which is a lot to ask from Dean Malenko. So it was cool to see him there. Scott Hall was there. Kevin Nash was there. Sean Waltman. I mean, they were all there. But Scott Hall, they did this fun thing where if you paid, I guess, for this particular attraction, Hall was standing up on a ladder holding a replica version of the Intercontinental Championship. And you can get your picture taken on the ladder with Scott Hall, who, of course, was part of that very first the very first televised WWE ladder match back at WrestleMania 10 with Shawn Michaels. And so I thought that was a cool thing. You know, look, if you're a fan, that's a cool little memento. You get your picture taken with Scott Hall. He's got the title. You're on the ladder. I will say this. It was comical. I was people watching. I was standing there watching these people trying to climb down from the ladder. Not a lot of graceful people taking these pictures with Scott. And Scott, every time, looked terrified that somebody was going to trip and fall and kill themselves. He would tell them, be careful. Be careful on the way down. And then Britt Baker came over. Dr. Britt Baker, one of the big female stars in AEW. Mrs. Adam Cole, although they're not married, are they? I think they're married. But anyway, she wanted nothing but to have her picture taken on this ladder with Scott Hall. And as soon as Scott Hall saw her, he was more than happy to oblige. And so I got this great shot of Britt Baker and Scott Hall standing halfway up the ladder, just chatting very casually, having a conversation. You know, nothing unusual about that. You know, just two wrestlers up on the ladder, you know, shooting the shit. So they had a lot of, like, special attractions like that. I didn't have time to hit up any of the panels, but, you know, I heard they were fun enough. Taz did a show. Eric Bischoff did a show. I did not see Tom McGee. Disappointingly enough, I did not get to see Tom McGee anywhere at some point this weekend, but I assume he was around somewhere. I will say this. You have not lived until you've had Scarlett Bordeaux walk past you. Holy cow. That's all I got to say. Killer Cross is a lucky man, and I will leave it at that. The weigh-in. They had a special weigh-in event, which was comical in that nobody actually... I think one person actually stood on the scale, maybe two, and weighed in. It's like, the scale was there, but it was sort of invisible. And it was less of a weigh-in and just sort of more of a kind of a day-before pre-show rally. We had media access, so we were front and center. They did a fun thing where MJF, Maxwell Jacob Friedman, a name that you are going to be hearing a lot about these next few years. And already, he's only 23, one of the best heels in all of wrestling. This man lives his gimmick. I'm sure you saw it if you watched the interview that he did with Chris Van Vliet. He just lives the gimmick 24/7. And it's funny, you know, when I had the chance to interview talent late last year from MLW, they gave me the option, who do you want to talk to? And my first choice was Tony Schiavone, and he was the one that I got. My second choice was MJF, and he probably would not be very happy to hear that I picked Tony Schiavone over him, but anyway. Hey, listen, Tony Schiavone, the guy's an institution. I can't pass up the opportunity to shoot the shit with Tony Schiavone. But at the time, it was like, well, how many people know who MJF is? You know, what's the interest level going to be in this interview? But I'll tell you what, they know who he is now. You're going to be hearing a lot more of that name going forward. Fun to hang out with Matthew from Botchamania. I got to share a Honey Jack shot with Matthew, Hornswoggle, and JD from New York. What a fucking crew that was. That was a very interesting conversation. But it was good to finally link up with Matthew. I had him on my show years ago, and we missed each other at WrestleMania a few times. Jack from Cultaholic was there. Some of the boys from What Culture. Steven Larson, I got to meet them. Does that make me a friendo? Is that what they are? Friendo, right? I hope I am. I hope it does. Sean Rossat from Fightful.com, which is a great source for reliable news. I encourage you all to subscribe. And Brian Zane from Wrestling with Regret. I had a karaoke face-off with Brian. Hopefully all of those videos will never see the light of day, whoever has possession of them. All I know is that JD picked a song. Didn't tell me what it was. He picked a song during karaoke. He told me I had to sing it with him. And this motherfucker, of all the songs, picked Ba with the Ba by Kid Rock. And he gave me the chorus parts. And he took all of the normal lyrics, because of course he did. May he enjoy an eternity of Roman Reigns versus Baron Corbin Iron Man matches in his nightmares. Every time his head hits the pillow. Ball with the ball in my sleep. And I met a lot of you guys too, and that's always one of the more fun parts of these trips. Anyway, that's sort of the quick overview, quick snapshot of my weekend. Now let's get into the pay-per-view, which is why a lot of you are tuned in right now. Double or Nothing. Cody did mention at one point during the weekend that Double or Nothing is going to be a regular annual event. So this was not a one and done. There will be a Double or Nothing again next year. I don't know if it'll be in Vegas. I don't know if it'll be somewhere else. Vegas would seem to make the most sense. And, you know, when this thing was over, my first thought was, hey, not too bad for a t-shirt company, yeah? I'm so happy that this show is over, so all of these idiots who kept harping, it's a t-shirt company, it's a t-shirt company. Boy, you know, for a t-shirt company, they put on a hell of a show, I must say. But now that it's over, we don't have to put up with this t-shirt company nonsense anymore. Feedback that I've seen to this pay-per-view online has been all over the map, largely very positive, as evidenced by the NXT, I would say, takeover-esque results of our Twitter poll, which I'm going to put up on the screen right now. There you see it. I would call that an overwhelmingly positive response. 5,700 votes, and there's still time open at Solomonster on Twitter if you want to vote. 91% thumbs up. 9% thumbs down. I had one person say, "Who is this, a Solomonster poll? We never get to see results like this." And I pointed out, many a time NXT TakeOver has scored numbers like this. And so when you're in the NXT TakeOver territory in terms of poll results, that's a great place to be in, because I have yet in all these years to see a bad TakeOver show. And so if you're in that conversation, then you know what? You had a hell of a show. But look at that, 91-9. And, you know, for the people calling this a and there are people, I mean, 9% of people gave this show a thumbs down. There were people saying that it sucked. To those people, I have no idea what it is that you're looking for in professional wrestling. But the business has clearly passed you by. And then on the other end of the spectrum, for the people calling it the greatest pay-per-view of all time, I will say I thought it was a great show, but let's not get carried away. It was a very enjoyable first effort that I think should give all of us a lot of hope that this crew, you know, they have their head screwed on straight. And they will truly give people a major league alternative that could also light a fire under Vince McMahon's ass that might even make his product a little bit better in the process. You know, I don't want to see WWE suffer from a successful AEW. I want to see them improve because of it. I want to see them get better because of it. You know, anyone rooting for anything else is missing the entire point. The goal should be to make wrestling as a whole more enjoyable and give people options, not weaken them. And the happiest people of all, after this weekend, should be every single talent currently under contract to WWE, or if they're under an NXT contract. Every single male and female performer under WWE or NXT contract should have a smile on their face from ear to ear after this weekend, because AEW just made them all a lot more money after that show on Saturday night. I think that's safe to say. The arena, so I was there live, and I was very fortunate that to be sitting third row ringside, so aside from being in the front row, there really was no better seat in the house. Place was packed. I don't know what the total capacity of the building with the set and the stage is. I'm going to guess, and I said this to somebody, if I had to take a guess, I would say with the stage, capacity was probably in the range of 12 or 13,000, and it looked like every seat in the building was filled. So again, it's not a gigantic building. This is not a building that has any luxury boxes. They do not have any at all that I could tell. So really, even if you're up in the nosebleeds, I don't think there's a bad seat in the house as far as you know, your view is concerned, because they don't have this whole row around the arena of luxury boxes like you'll find in a lot of the newer arenas. So from where we were sitting, the stage, the poker chips, I know it's a relatively minor thing, but I love shit like that. You know, just, it's been so long since we've had pay-per-views. Forget WrestleMania for a second. Even WrestleMania this year. WrestleMania was a giant screen. You know, the last time they were in New Jersey for WrestleMania, they had this recreation of the Brooklyn Bridge, and you know, you could always at least rely on that one big show every year to kind of look unique and feel very special. And, you know, it's been a while since we've really had that. So even just something like those stupid poker chips, I looked at that and I said, hey, you know what? That's pretty cool. They had the entrance tubes that looked like something straight out of TNA in 2006, where the heels would come out one tube, the baby faces would come out the other tube. I could go either way on that. I thought it looked cool enough. And the crowd was into the show from start to finish. There were some matches where they quieted down. I saw tweets from people saying, oh, this crowd is dead. I don't know how it came across to all of you, but as somebody who was there in the building live, I can tell you that the crowd was pretty much amped up and loud all night long. Even the parts where maybe they quieted down a little bit during the Joshi match or some of the other matches. There was no match where they died. There was no match that they turned on. They started stupid chants or anything like that. So again, I don't know, you know, you guys streamed it. A lot of you guys watched it on pay-per-view. You watched it on stream or however you watched it. But as somebody who was in the building, I could tell you, it was loud all night long. Now, as far as the production is concerned, I got a lot of feedback about Jim Ross, Alex Marvez, and Excalibur. Excalibur is actually very good. And he even goes back to the All-In show last year in September. Excalibur, I think, was a great get for the announce team. And I think Jim Ross was a great get for them as well. Because Jim Ross has a lot of name recognition. He has a lot of name value. He's been in the business for 35 plus years, 40 years, brings a wealth of experience and knowledge with him. And he's doing more than just announcing. He's also contributing as sort of an advisor, you know, behind the scenes, maybe even recruiting in some cases. So I think there's a lot of value to bringing in Jim Ross. Is Jim Ross on commentary the same Jim Ross as he was 10 years ago? No, he's not. He's older. He's been through a lot of shit in his life. And he's not as familiar with a lot of the talent as he was when he was in WWE full-time. You know, when you're in WWE full-time, you're around the same wrestlers all the time. And when he was working in talent relations, nobody in that company, not even Vince McMahon, knew who the talent was, probably, better than Jim Ross, because he was working with them on an everyday basis. So I think it's unfair to expect that he's going to know all of the talent and all of the history and everything about them. But it was obvious watching him in New Japan, especially there towards the end, he was not as up on the product as he probably should have been. And I think that's something that now that he's full-time with AEW, I would hope that he will improve on that front and he'll get more familiar with the talent and more comfortable in that setting. He had his moments on this pay-per-view. I came home. I did not watch every single match back, but I wanted to watch enough to get a sense of the commentators. Alex Marvez was no good. Now, maybe over time, Alex Marvez will improve. You know, he, I think for many years, was more of a football columnist. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. He also did wrestling columns as well, but he wasn't really a wrestling guy. And I think he's friendly with Cody or somebody, and so that's probably as much as anything why they brought him in to be, you know, one of the announcers. And then maybe in time he'll improve. It's the first time. It's the first show. I thought listening to him, he was very low. You know, where Excalibur had a lot of energy and sort of charisma about him, they'd go to Alex and he'd be like, oh, yeah. You know, like, yeah, the enthusiasm, I think, wasn't there. He seemed very nervous, which is understandable. He was definitely the weak link of the three. I don't want to shit on him too much. It's one time. You know, if they have another event and he's still awful, then it's going to become a problem. But as far as this show is concerned, from what I saw, I would have to agree. I mean, he was pretty bad. We had the buy-in pre-show, Casino Royale Battle Royal, with the winner challenging the winner of the Chris Jericho-Kenny Omega match to crown the first ever AEW World Champion. So the wrestlers entered in squads of five based on their designated suit. They were in Vegas, got to play off that theme. So you had diamonds and hearts and clubs and so forth. Out first were MJF, Sunny Days, Dustin Thomas, who is a bilateral amputee since the age of 3. He had some kind of issue with his spine, so he has no legs. And it's impressive to watch him out there doing his thing. I think you save him as a special attraction. I don't think you put him on your television show every week, if in fact they're going to use him going forward. But watching him here, it was pretty impressive. Brandon Cutler and Michael Nakazawa, they were part of the first contingent of wrestlers to come out. Nakazawa got over on night one. He got over from the moment he walked out to that ring. Even the people who did not know who he was never saw him one time in their lives. And he had people eating out of the palm of his hand in this building. His part of the gimmick he was using at the beginning. He was using a bottle of baby oil to wiggle his way out of certain holds. I couldn't hear this live in the building, but when I went back to watch the replay, I saw MJF beating up Dustin Thomas and then apologizing and calling him Lieutenant Dan. I just fucking died. That's a Forrest Gump reference for all you youngins out there. And a fairly offensive one, but my God, did I laugh my ass off when I heard him say that. Lieutenant Dan. Next out was Brian Pillman Jr. We had Joey Janela, Jimmy Havoc, Isaiah Cassidy of Private Party, tag team straight out of House of Glory, and Sean Spears out to an arena full of 10 chants. This place was going nuts. I looked around. Everybody had their hands in the air chanting 10, 10, 10. It was like when he came out for the Royal Rumble. Was it 2017? It was his main roster debut with the new gimmick, I think. He came out, everybody was chanting 10 on his first night in. So that had to be a good feeling for him. Billy Gunn, Glacier, Jungle Boy, Ace Romero, and the other half of Private Party, Marken, they were out next. Glacier is out there in 2019 doing spots with Joey Janela. And he still looks like he can kick some ass. He was throwing some, back kicks and leg sweeps and all that kind of shit. So Janela, a few minutes later, he sits down in the middle of the ring. He lights up a cigarette, which Jimmy Havoc promptly proceeds to staple to his forehead. He stapled a lit cigarette to this guy's forehead, and it stayed there for a while. It was still smoking. It was quite the visual. Next up were Sonny Kiss, Marco Stunt, Tommy Dreamer, and the Luchasaurus, who was one of the standouts from those later seasons of Lucha Underground. The big spot with the Luchasaurus had to be that chokeslam. I don't know how Joey Janela is still not paralyzed or still among the living after this, but he chokeslammed Joey Janela out of the ring through a table on the outside. And in falling, Janela rotated and basically landed through the table on top of his head. It looked pretty brutal, but I guess he's okay. We had Adam Hangman Page was the final entrant at Lucky 21. This is after his match with Pac was bumped to an indie show overseas a week earlier. And, I mean, you guys are I'm sure, familiar with the story by now, some political nonsense. Pac was likely going to win this match, as he should have. I would have had him win that match too, but that would have put him in contention for the AEW title. And him winning that did not fit into their plans, so they decided, you know what, instead of doing this match, we promise people Pac against Adam Page. We'll send Adam Page overseas on short notice to the UK, I believe it was in the UK, and we'll give people what they want. We'll give people the match, and we'll put the match up for free on YouTube, which they did. I watched it. It was a pretty good match. And it was a long one, too. Went somewhere between 15 and 20 minutes, so they got a full match out of it. In the end, Pac, he was disqualified, so he had kind of a cheap finish. But they did at least, you know, give us the match. And so it wasn't a case where Pac refused to do a job or anything like that, so much as AEW just didn't see a good way out of things, so they decided to go ahead and change things up. But to me, here's the thing about that. To me, that's a rookie move. That is a rookie move there. They set this match up months ago. These are the kinds of issues that should have been sorted out a long time ago, not a week before the pay-per-view. So instead, they put Paige in the Battle Royal and had him win the entire thing. Orange Cassidy was out there as well, and no, I am not related to Orange Cassidy, nor do I moonlight as Orange Cassidy. Some people seem to think I do. It came down to Paige, Adam Paige, and MJF, who had gone out through the ropes earlier, not over the top. So he snuck in behind Paige, tried to dump him out. Paige got back inside and took MJF's head off with the buckshot clothesline before dumping him out. So Adam Page is the winner. Not surprisingly, Adam Page will challenge for the AEW title. And his battle royals go, not the best, not the worst. I thought it was enjoyable for what it was. I saw some people really shitting hard on this match. You know, it reminded me a lot of the battle royal that they did at All In. And I remember thinking that was a pretty fun match too. I don't really know why I saw so much hatred. And by the way, I see one question in the chat. Do I think Pac will work with AEW after this? Yes, absolutely. In fact, they've gone on record as saying they want to work with him in the future. There's no burn bridge. There's no bad blood. And I expect even before this year is out, we will see Pac wrestling. Maybe it all out. You know, at the end of August, I would expect that we will see him wrestling for them. Absolutely. We have Kip Sabian and Sammy Guevara. This was the final match on the pre-show. They did a spot here where Guevara suplexed Sabian out over the top. Both men tumbled out to the floor. The old Bret Hart Dynamite Kid spot. But they landed on their feet, and Guevara delivered a standing suplex on the floor. And after the show, Cedric Alexander tweeted a gif of him delivering the exact same move to Drew Gulak on an episode of 205 Live. So a little friendly shot taken there. 6:30 attempt by Guevara misses, and Sabian hits his split-legged slam finish for the win. I thought both guys looked impressive. Nice little 10-minute showcase of what they can do. You know, they may not be as well-known as Dean Ambrose or somebody like that to wrestling fans, but these are the guys that they're going to have to build around in the future, you know, to create their own stars. You've got to start showcasing them now. So I thought, for what it was, I thought this was very good. The pay-per-view opened with SoCal Uncensored, Christopher Daniels, Frankie Kazarian, and Scorpio Sky against the Stronghearts, Shima, Lindemann, and T-Hawk. And this was kind of a showcase for the talent from OWE, which is Oriental Wrestling Entertainment out of China. Shima, my God, I mean, Shima's been around forever. I saw him live for the first time. Maybe the only time before this that I saw Shima live was at the Ring of Honor Final Battle Show in 2006. He was in a six-man tag match that night. So he's still around doing his thing. I thought it was smart to open the show with this. Yeah, just a fast-paced, all-action match. SCU picks up the win with the best Meltzer driver ever on Lindemann. We had Dr. Britt Baker. Kylie Rae and Nyla Rose, they were scheduled to have themselves a triple threat match until Brandi Rhodes came out. She started to disrobe. Get your mind out of the gutter. It's not what I mean. But she was basically taking off, like, I think she had a jacket on or something, and they wanted you to think that she was about to enter herself into this match, and instead, she explained that there was a fourth surprise entrant, and this person was awesome. And out came Awesome Kong, which was a very nice surprise. People were caught off guard by that. They popped huge in the building for it. It's been over 3 years since Kong last wrestled, I believe. I know she had a bad back. Now she has a role on the Netflix show Glow, right? She's the welfare queen. But she donned the old Kong costume here. Fans ate it up. I thought this was good. Kong didn't do much. She spent most of the match on the floor outside. But people popped for all of her key spots, including a Tower of Doom spot where Kong double power bombed Baker and Kylie out of the corner while the two of them delivered a superplex to Nyla Rose. Came down to Baker and Kylie, and Baker caught her with a super kick and Adam Cole's last shot for the win. They're clearly positioning Britt Baker as their lead female star, which I kind of figured was the case the minute I saw that she was the only woman aside from Brandi to be brought to the television upfronts 2 weeks ago for TNT. Kong, you know, Kong was a nice surprise. I'm guessing that's all she was. I don't know that she's being brought back to be any kind of regular for them. Physically, I'm not sure that she can. I mean, the way that she was moving around in there, I kind of wonder if her back is still problematic for her. It kind of seemed like it was. I certainly can't see her wrestling any kind of full-time schedule. But for a one-night surprise appearance, I thought this worked well. By the way, for those of you who are in the chat, shout out to everybody who is joining me in the middle of the day on a Monday. It is a holiday here in the U.S., and we have over 2,100 people. I thought, okay, you know what? I'll come back from Vegas. I'll do a live stream. I'll do it at like noon on a Monday. I know it's Memorial Day. People are going to be out or whatever. And I said, if I get 300 people, 400 people, I'll be happy. We've got 2,100 plus. So shout out to all you crazy bastards in the chat. And don't forget, super chats are enabled. I know a few of you have sent in some. I will review them after. They're just streaming so quickly I can't see them. But thank you all for being part of this here today. We had the best friends, Chucky T and Trent Beretta, against Angelico and Jack Evans. Evans is always entertaining, just trash-talking out loud during his matches like he did in Lucha Underground. And Helico gave Beretta a running razor's edge at one point into the corner, followed up by Jack Evans with a 630 and the pin attempt, which was broken up by Chuck Taylor. I was watching. I couldn't help myself. Tony Schiavone was literally two rows in front of me, off to the left, right? Front row. I don't know if he was with his son. He was with somebody, it looked like. And Tony is not one to express himself emotionally. You know, you don't expect to see Tony Schiavone with a big smile on his face, clapping or jumping up and down or anything like that. This guy's been around forever. I mean, the shit that he's seen, this is, you know, it probably takes a lot to get him excited these days. But I couldn't help but watch whenever there were these big, dangerous moves and dangerous spots. I looked over. I wanted to see what his reaction was. Because he doesn't show a lot of emotion. And I was watching, and even he seemed impressed by some of the moves he was seeing here in this match. He actually cracked a smile. And then others, like some more dangerous moves, he just kind of put his head in his hands as if to say, I lived through the Crockett era, and those guys didn't need to do half the shit that you guys are doing to get over. But there were also people on my timeline screaming about how awful Alex Marvez was, and they kind of wish that AEW would have snatched up Tony to work with JR, or maybe Schiavone to work with Excalibur. But these same people forget that Tony Schiavone signed a multi-year contract last year with MLW. So even if he wanted to, I'm pretty sure he couldn't. Best Friends, though, picked up the win with their strong zero finish, which is a cradle pile driver, diving foot stomp combo. And so after the match, Best Friends, they are looking for a hug. They want Jack and Helico to come on in for a hug, which they teased. And just as they obliged and came in for the hug, the lights went out. And when they came back on, there were a bunch of dudes in the ring, around the ring, who beat up all four men, mostly to silence and then to boos, because a lot of people, myself included, had no idea who they were. Apparently, it was the Super Smash Brothers, which is not a name that will survive on television, given that I don't think Nintendo would be very happy about that. So that might have to be changed. But they also had a bunch of smaller guys in masks around them, like, kind of, you know, looking like demons from hell, you know, like they're minions or something. This was not well-received inside the building, at least not at first, because as I said, a lot of people had no idea who they were. You know, and when the lights go out like that, here's the other thing. When you do that spot where the match is over, you're building to something, the lights go out, people have a certain expectation when they come back on. You know, you're going to get the big reaction based on who it is. And that just wasn't the case here because nobody knew who the fuck they were. But they did hit some cool moves. And look, at least they're trying to establish, you know, a new act on their roster. I'm not saying that when the lights came on, it should have been some 45-year-old washed-up, legend making a one-time appearance. It's cool. You know, they've clearly set this group up here as some kind of a heel faction going forward. And I think that's fine. But again, people just didn't know who they were. We had the Joshi match. So we had these ladies here, Hikaru Shida, Riho, and Ryo Mizunami against Aja Kong, Yuka Sakazaki, and Emi Sakura. It was hard to keep up with the faces and the names. I mean, being live in the crowd, I couldn't necessarily put the face with... I knew who Aja Kong was, obviously, but I didn't know who a lot of the other performers were. But even still, I enjoyed this. These ladies worked their asses off, and Aja Kong, even at 48 years old, and moving around a lot slower than she used to, is still a very intimidating sight. When she is throwing those slaps and that spinning back fist, oh my god, you know, I will never forget that it was a Raw match that she had late in 1995. This was right before they disbanded the women's division, because in December of 95, I think, that was pretty much it. And then, you know, the Medusa went to WCW and dropped the women's title in the trash can. So this was right around the time they were about to fold the women's division. But they had a working relationship where they were bringing in a lot of the Japanese ladies. And Aja Kong was one of them. And she had a match on TV. And she just straight murdered. I want to say her name was Asari, I think was the name of the woman that she wrestled. Broke this woman's nose with that spinning back fist. Maybe that's why Vince McMahon decided to abandon the division. He didn't want to be complicit in multiple homicides. But when I think of Kong, that's the first thing I think of. And in this match, she brought a metal can of some kind into the ring to use as a weapon. Another woman grabbed a kendo stick. Sakura hit a moonsault on one of the women for what was clearly a near fall. But the timekeeper rang the bell. And I looked over, and Justin Roberts was sitting next to him, and they looked look of great confusion and panic there for a second. The fans knew it was a botch. They booed it. They just continued the match because it really was not a three count. And it didn't ruin the match. It did kill whatever momentum they had in that moment, so I felt bad for them. It wasn't their fault. Kong did go for the back fist, but she ended up hitting her own partner with it by accident. Sheeta hit the Shining Wizard for the win. Timekeeper botch aside, this was a pretty hard-hitting match. And again, it's tough when people don't know who a lot of these women are. But that doesn't, I mean, it didn't seem to affect anybody's enjoyment of the match itself. And I think featuring them on that TNT show. So this fall, when AEW comes to TNT, they're going to have to be trying things to separate themselves from WWE and everything else out there. And this is where I actually think it's important that they do things like this to separate themselves from the pack, the way the WCW and Eric Bischoff had the cruiserweights. So he had Japanese cruiserweights, Mexican cruiserweights. That cruiserweight division became a must-see highlight of WCW Monday Nitro every single week, and it was something you could not find on USA Network. And when WWE, a year or two later, tried their own light heavyweight division, it was a bust, and they abandoned it after a while. But that was a huge feature that really made WCW feel fresh, you know, and feel different. So I think featuring maybe these women and having some of them on TV on some weeks would be another way to go about doing that. Give me a second here. I need a drink. It's been a long weekend. We got a lot of chatter going on in the chat room. Shout out to everybody listening live, all 2,100 plus. We got a house party being set up outside. I don't know if you can hear that. But they are setting up for some music, some live entertainment. I'm kind of racing against the clock. I'm praying that the party does not start while I am recording here. But if it does, well, we'll just have a party. That's all. YouTube might not like it very much if there's music playing, but what can you do? So now we get into the meat and potatoes of the show here. We get to Cody and Dustin Rhodes. Brother versus brother. I had this as my match of the night. They finally got to have the match they were hoping to have at WrestleMania 4 years ago that they were denied. They had a match at Fastlane, and it wasn't very good. And they never did get that WrestleMania match. And I believe that both of them, if you ask them, would say that this match on this show, given the circumstances and the historic nature of the night, meant far more to them than any WrestleMania match ever would have meant. So in the end, it worked out. Now, I want to just make a comment about Cody's entrance. So Cody comes out, and they have a throne that is clearly meant to mimic the throne that Triple H sometimes uses for his WrestleMania entrance. It's got the Triple H, that logo, that emblem, the shield thing that he has as part of his entrance. And Cody goes to the ring, and he grabs a sledgehammer, comes back up the ramp. He is staring at the throne. He takes the sledgehammer, and he smashes the throne. So that was his entrance. Now, earlier in the weekend, Cody was doing an event, and he actually was taken to task by a lot of people for knocking Bayley. He made a comment that they had sent a camera crew to Chicago for the Road to Double or Nothing series on YouTube, and they were filming Kylie Rae. Now, Kylie Rae, you know, she's this bubbly personality, all smiles, and, you know, people have made comparisons with her and Bayley. But Cody was talking about Kylie and said, oh, what a ball of emotion, and that's what we wanted, someone passionate, and she's not the wacky, not the wacky inflatable tube men pretending to be nice. Which was a very odd comment for him to make. I certainly have never heard stories about Bayley behind the scenes not being nice. I'm not sure where that comes from. Maybe she wasn't nice to him and he never forgot. It was a very bizarre comment for him to make. And just a stupid thing for him to say. You know, like, if you're going to take a dig at someone, take a dig at somebody that people hate. Not somebody that you never hear a bad word about. So and you could kind of tell that at the weigh-in when he came out, he joked about, you know, I have to be careful what I say. Sometimes I run my mouth a little too much. I don't know if he was drunk. I don't know what his situation was when he made that comment about Bailey, but he did seem to have some regret about it. So not his finest moment, but the entrance, and some people loved it. And I know when the event was over, he had a different explanation for it. He said, I had dreams about this entrance, and, you know, Triple H's entrance at WrestleMania 30 was one of my favorites. And he tried to kind of explain away why he did what he did. Didn't do a very good job of it, I don't think. It seemed pretty obvious to me. It was a shot at Triple H. And everybody was cheering for it. But you know what? You got to be careful with that shit. Because at some point, it just becomes petty. And the focus is too much on Triple H and Vince McMahon and WWE and taking pot shots at them. And the more that you do of that, the more that people start to turn against you. And if there's one thing that AEW has right now, although they have a lot of haters, but if there's one thing that AEW has a lot of right now, it's a lot of goodwill that they've built up with the fans. You know, it's the cool thing right now to shit all over Vince McMahon and WWE. It is the cool thing to do right now, but I think a lot of it is justified because the product is so freaking awful. But a lot of people love to take knocks at Vince McMahon and the product and all that. And a lot of it is justified. Cody should not be doing that. Cody should worry about Cody. He should worry about AEW and not drawing attention to WWE. The more of that that they do, I just think it's a bad look for them. And it was something that just came off to me when I watched it as just overly petty for no reason at all. You know, we know that he was unhappy in WWE towards the end. We know that he didn't want to do Stardust anymore. We know that Vince McMahon, I think, once made a comment about how he doesn't see Cody going above a certain level. All of these things, I know. We know the story behind it, and Cody has every reason to want to just shove it right up their ass. But you can do that without even doing stuff like this. Let the show speak for itself. When this show was over, people were raving about it. That's all you need. So to me, it just came off as petty. But I know a lot of people got a kick out of the entrance. So hey, to each their own. Dustin looked to be in the best shape of his entire life. So he looked like he's been training hard for this match. Loud Dusty chants early on. And chants of Dusty's favorite, which is the shirt that Dustin wore to the weigh-ins the day before. Cody claimed in the post-show scrum, somebody asked him about it, and he said he had no idea that Dustin was even doing that. He had no idea that Dustin went out and had a shirt made that said that, but he said that's cool. He said that's what's cool about AEW, that you don't necessarily need to go out and you know, get permission to do things like that. You've got the freedom to be creative. And, I mean, who was going to tell Dustin that he couldn't do it? And so he didn't seem to have any problem with it. Brandy got involved multiple times early in this match, even wrecked Dustin with a spear outside the ring. Earl Hebner was the referee for the match, and I have to say, I love Earl, and Earl is one of the great referees of all time. But how old is Earl right now? Somebody in the chat, go to Wikipedia and tell me how old Earl Hebner is. He's got to be late 60s, I'm guessing, at this point. And he's starting to look it. In these matches, midway through, he was sucking wind. I was starting to get a little worried about him. You know, being a referee, it's not an easy job. You know, going up, you're going down. Sometimes you're taking bumps, you're being pushed around. It's the constant up and down motion. Earl's been doing this a long time. You know, he's no spring chicken anymore. So that was the first time I can really remember watching Earl and thinking, man, he looks like he's really sucking wind here. He's got to take a break or something. But I did think he was the perfect, you know, referee for the match because maybe going forward they'll use him for these quote-unquote legends-type matches or special attraction-type matches. I think that's the best role for him. Paul Turner, who quit Ring of Honor, he was in Ring of Honor forever. And they got him to quit, and they signed him, and he is actually their head referee. He was the referee for the main event. But using Earl, I think, for special kind of attractions like this would be a smart move going forward. But yeah, Brandy got involved, as I said, speared Dustin, Earl threw her out when she wouldn't leave, Diamond Dallas Page walked out, put her on his shoulder, and carried her to the back, which was kind of random, but not really. DDP was part of Cody's entourage for his NWA title match at All In, DDP had a lot of history with Dusty Rhodes. He has been very clear in saying that were it not for Dusty, he would not have had a career in wrestling. You know, DDP was already considered old by the time he first wanted to become a wrestler. He was in his mid-30s. He had been a manager and a mouthpiece. And Dusty believed in him. And Dusty gave him an opportunity. And he credits Dusty with him going on to become world champion and all that. And so he has a great affinity for Cody's dad and is very close with the family. And so I'm not surprised that, you know, he would have been part of the show in some way. Dustin did a blade job and he bled an absolute gusher. I hesitate to compare it to Eddie Guerrero at Judgment Day when he was wrestling JBL that first time, because that to me is still the worst that I've ever seen. And he actually did go into shock and had to go to the hospital when that show was over. But this was getting close. I mean, he was leaking blood for the rest of this match. Actually, the other one I think of is Vince McMahon at the Survivor Series in 2003. He had a match with The Undertaker, a Buried Alive match. I think it was a Buried Alive match. And what was it, 2 minutes into that match, Vince gigged, as they say, and cut himself pretty deep. And my God, I mean, the blood that he lost in that match. And that was 2 minutes in. So there have been some pretty bad ones. I'd put this up there. Now, he bladed, but he got busted open after a corner spot where he went face first into the exposed turnbuckle in the corner. I mean, look, this guy is a Rhodes. He's Dusty's son. And he's no longer working for WWE. He doesn't have the WWE handcuffs shackling him. So you knew there was going to be blood in this match, just like Cody. Cody got color in his match with Nick Aldis last year. So now it was Dustin's turn. But there were puddles of blood inside the ring. There was a great shot of Dustin's face covered in crimson when he reversed a figure four leg lock that Cody had put him in. Just he's screaming in agony, blood pouring down his face. Then he got a hold of Cody's weight belt, pulled Cody's tights down, and started spanking his little brother with it. Dustin hit a frickin' Canadian destroyer for a near fall. And then it became a series of near falls, one after the other, each guy hitting big moves. Finally, Cody hits the crossroads for the win. Dustin started to take his boots off when the match was over, which is something that you sometimes see when somebody is going to leave their boots in the ring, going to retire. And I think this would have been a great match for Dustin if this was going to be his swan song. You can't come up with him. You can't dream up a better match for him to go out on if this was going to be his last match. But Cody saw this. He came back to the ring, took the mic, and said, "No, no, 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 no. You don't get to retire. Not tonight. I need a favor. I put my name down for a match in Jacksonville next month." I think that's their Fight for the Fallen show that they're doing. He says, "I put my name down for a match, a tag team match against the Young Bucks." Cody said, "I don't need a partner. I don't need a friend. I need my older brother." And his voice cracked as he said it. He started crying. Dustin hugged him in the center of the ring, and the place popped huge for this. And this reminded me of Dusty's promo. Now, so Cody's promo here and the hug at the end, right? And maybe he addressed this in the post-show interview that he did and I missed it, but there's no way that Cody did not borrow this from one of the great all-time promos that his father cut in the ring with Dustin in WCW in 1994. And I know some of you are going to know what I'm talking about here. The View Never Changes. The View Never Changes promo, where Dusty talked about how he neglected Dustin for so many years. You know, "When I was world champion, I neglected you. When I went to Hollywood, I neglected you. When I put a suit on and became a corporate suit, I neglected you." And going on and on and on. And he talked about, you know, Bunkhouse Buck and Terry Funk and Arn Anderson. I think they had just either turned on Dustin or attacked him, or they did something horrible to Dustin. And, you know, he talked about how they betrayed his son. And he begged Dustin to let him be his partner. And the two of them embraced. And it was just this great emotional moment. And I encourage, if you've never seen the View Never Changes promo, as I call it, it's on YouTube. Go find it. Go watch it. Listen to the entire thing. Listen to Dusty speak. You'll realize why he is one of the all-time great promos. But just watch that. And think about how wrestling is today, WWE, or just wrestling in general. Look at that promo. Watch that promo. Watch the emotion in his voice, how real it felt. My God, when you realize you're watching, let's say, an episode of Raw and SmackDown, and Kofi Kingston or Kevin Owens will come out, and they'll cut this, what you think is a really great promo, and afterwards you'll be like, wow, that was a great promo. And then you go back and you watch a segment like that with Dusty from 94, and you realize that I have no concept anymore of what a great promo even is. You just realize how inferior in 2019, when it comes to promos and interviews, how inferior almost everything else that now would be considered so great. But when you compare it to some of those types of promos, ugh, it's like night and day. Well, maybe MJF can resurrect the art of the promo here in 2019. So anyway, I'm almost positive that Cody kind of was thinking about that and borrowed from that and what they did here at this in this post-match. It was a very emotional moment. And after the show, Dustin called it the greatest night of his life. He didn't mince any words. He didn't say it's one of the great moments, top three, top five. He said unequivocally, of all the things I've done in my 30-plus years in the wrestling business, WCW, WWE, TNA, well, we'll forget Black Reign in TNA, the greatest night of his life. Think about what that guy has done in over 30 years in the wrestling business. And he said the Double or Nothing was the pinnacle of his career. So this was pro wrestling done right. This was pro wrestling, in my opinion, at its finest. I could have done without the whole I'm here to kill the Attitude Era stuff in the build-up to this match, because I just didn't think that part of it was necessary. But I thought they hit a total home run here. And as I said before, this was my favorite part of the entire show. Shout out again to the 2,400 people that we have listening live here on this Memorial Day episode, episode 601 of the Solomonster Sounds Off podcast. We had Bret the Hitman Hart introduced next as a surprise, fresh off of his second WWE Hall of Fame induction and a cameo at WrestleMania. He was introduced here to bring out the new AEW Championship belt. Now, Bret is my all-time favorite. A lot of you guys who listen to my show, you know that. So I popped when he came out. I did not expect him to come out here. That was a genuine surprise. Bruce Mitchell of PWTorch.com said that it was originally supposed to be Ric Flair presenting the title. He had been earmarked for that spot. That obviously went out the window after his surgery. He was not able to make it out for his roast at StarCast or any of the events this weekend in Vegas. So it would have been Rick and Bret. You know what? Bret's not a bad backup. And they unveiled the championship belt. And looking at the title, I would say that if the IWGP title fucked one of those UFC titles and popped out a kid, it would be the AEW title. Which is not meant to be an insult. It is not meant to be an insult at all. I like it. It actually reminded me a lot of the Gift of the Gods title in Lucha Underground, which I loved. Some people may think it's a bit gaudy. You know, look, Ric Flair walked around for years with a gigantic gold belt. That's pretty gaudy, too. I didn't hear too many people complaining about Big Gold. Big Gold is one of the best title designs of all time. I like it. So we had poor Mick Foley. I have to mention this. I know some people are going to not like the comparison and whatever, but I have to mention this. They have Mick Foley come out on television last Monday night on Raw to introduce the 24/7 championship. And Bret Hart gets to introduce that, the AEW title. What you see there on your screen, you tell me which one of those two you would rather carry over your shoulder. Somebody in that company must really hate Mick Foley. First, they have him introduce the tomato title, okay? The universal title. I call it the tomato title. They have him be the one to introduce that belt to loud boos from the audience. Remember when he pulled the belt out of the bag and introduced it, how I don't know if apathy is the right word or just pure hatred, but people did not like it and they booed it, and there was a huge backlash to it. Well, now we have another ugly belt to debut. Hey, I know, let's call Mick. That's sort of becoming his thing now. We'll call in Mick Foley to introduce these ugly-looking championship belts. And I'm not even against the idea, because I haven't had a chance to talk about this. I'll talk about it now real quick. I'm not against the idea of having a 24/7 rule for a title. I think R-Truth is the perfect guy for this role. I think he can be very entertaining. On a show on Mondays that generally is not very entertaining at all. It's a total jobber belt. That's all it is. And why do you think when all the lower card talent are chasing around after it backstage like fools, you don't see Drew McIntyre chasing after it? You don't see Samoa Joe chasing after it or AJ Styles running after that championship. And there's a reason for that. It is meant to be a joke. But it can still be a fun gimmick. But that green belt is just, it's horrendous. And there were some people who got upset when I made the comparison on Twitter between the two title unveilings. Because, oh, that's not fair. One's a jobber belt and the other is a world title. Would it make you happier if I compared it with the tomato title unveiling? Because that's a championship of the universe. Fuck the world. That's the championship of the entire universe. And that sucks too. Hangman Adam Page was called out to the ring. So he comes down. And Brett botched and said that he would face the winner of Jericho Omega for the title next month. And I'm thinking, next month? They don't have any big shows next month. And then after he corrected himself and he said, in a few months. I'm assuming All Out is where they would crown the new champion. Or maybe on that first TNT show. That wouldn't be a bad idea either. MJF interrupts. This was one of the best parts of the entire show. He teased Brett over the fan who attacked him at the Hall of Fame last month. He's like, oh, watch out. He mocked Adam Page and his logo being a horse. He told Page, slow down there, Seabiscuit, which I popped for. MJF, he's already a great heel. He's one of their stars in the making. Him and Adam Page both are two of their young stars in the making. And I know that, you know, MJF, I know, does not like being compared to EC3, or so I've been told. But I got a total EC3 vibe watching him. Just watching him talk and the way he speaks and carries himself. And I think he's a better promo than what I've seen of EC3, even going back to TNA. But if EC3 gets a sudden push on TV tonight, I guess we'll know why. Going to be very interesting watching Raw tonight, because as I am recording this live, there is a new episode tonight of Monday Night Raw. The first show that they're doing since Double or Nothing the other night. And it's going to be very interesting, I think, watching that show coming off of this pay-per-view, listening to the commentary, which I usually try very hard not to most weeks. But I think it's going to be interesting to see if any comments are made, if anything is done that's sort of out of the ordinary. Because, you know, look, it wasn't just that this other company came along and put on a great show. This other company came along, put on a great show, and took a lot of pot shots at them. And took some of their biggest names, whether it's Bret Hart or, you know, Dean Ambrose, and featured them on this pay-per-view. And right now they're the talk of the town. How will WWE respond? I'm a little fearful, frankly, of how they'll respond. But, you know, it makes things a little more interesting. Jungle Boy and Jimmy Havoc walked out to stop MJF from leaving. They and Adam Page threw MJF into the crowd in the ring. Bret held up the title. And that was that. Unfortunately, and I was not made aware of this until after the show was over, but unfortunately, as Brett was leaving and he was walking down the ramp and headed to the back, and this happened off camera, so there's no footage of it, but some people saw it, he either missed a step or I don't know what happened, but he fell off the stage. So, and apparently this wasn't like a little slip, he fell off the stage. Now, apparently he's okay, thankfully, but man, I mean, between this and the Hall of Fame shit, we got to protect Brett. I don't know, we got to build like a fortress around this guy or hire a bodyguard for him, maybe wrap him in bubble wrap or something, I don't know. But we've got to do a better job here of protecting Bret Hart. He's wrestling royalty, and he's not had a good 2 months in that respect. Although, I have to say, you know, Bret Hart, for a guy who's been retired for so long, Bret Hart goes from the Hall of Fame, right, his second induction, makes an appearance at WrestleMania, actually twice, because they didn't just bring him out with the Hall of Famers, he came out with Natty and Beth Phoenix as well, and then the very next month, he's on this big, hyped-up, new wrestling, you know, promotions pay-per-view show, introducing their world title belt. So, Bret Hart's been quite the featured performer here these last 2 months. AAA Tag Team titles on the line. The champions, the Young Bucks, defending against the Lucha Brothers, Pentagon and Phoenix. The Bucks got shortchanged in their match at All In, and they had a rush off the air. They had a whole big match planned at the end of that pay-per-view, and what did it go? 10 minutes, maybe? So here, they had 25 minutes to go out and show the world what they can do, and both teams delivered. And considering who we're talking about here, not much of a surprise, right? Two of the best teams in the world right now. I could have done without as many kickouts of big moves at the end as we had here. There were, I thought, a few too many for my liking, but I thought this was an excellent match. And really, I'm not going to sit here and go move for move because it's ridiculous. What can I say about it? I can't possibly recap all of the action here because it would be impossible for me to do so. I haven't had the chance to watch this match yet back on TV. This is one of the matches I have not yet watched the TV version of. But being there live, I mean, it was one big move after another. People were on their feet the entire time. And it's hard to keep track of everything that was going on. Matt did give Phoenix a brainbuster on the top turnbuckle at one point. That was one of the more dangerous spots of the match. And it's no wonder, you know, Phoenix and Penta were too banged up the next day to make their booking. And they had to cancel. They were supposed to be wrestling somewhere else, and they had to pull out due to injury. I don't know the nature of the injury. I don't know if they're just banged up, if it's more serious than that. I hope it's not more serious than that, but they were definitely hurting when this match was over. We had more bang for your buck. Only gets a two count. They tried for the Meltzer driver. Phoenix broke it up. Pentagon gave Matt the arm snap, which in Lucha Underground would put you out at least for a few weeks, if not months. And here it was just another spot that led into the next one. Matt got Phoenix up for a tombstone, even with one arm. And Nick flew in for the Meltzer driver and the win to retain their titles. One of the takeaways from this show is that tag team wrestling is alive and well. I think that has to be one of the big takeaways from this pay-per-view. You can see why the Revival are chomping at the bit to come here. How do you think they felt, by the way, watching their hero, Bret Hart, show up? I think if Dash Wilder was there and saw Bret fall off the stage, he would have beaten up the people who put the stage together. So you got the Revival, you've got Anderson and Gallows, whose contracts are up in September. And as far as anybody knows, they haven't re-signed yet. That's why they're not doing anything with them on TV, even though they're on the same brand now again as AJ Styles. But I guess with this wild card bullshit, none of that even matters anymore. But you got, like I said, the Revival, Anderson and Gallows, who I think, even if they end up in AEW, they're likely also going to end up back in New Japan. That was their home for many years. They were treated well there. And certainly there's other people working in AEW who are also doing dates for New Japan. I think that's their future right there. But those four guys, in my opinion, are as good as gone. You know, when their contracts are up. The Revival's got a little bit longer to wait. And a lot can happen in a year. You know, there's a lot of buzz around AEW right now. They're not even going to have a TV show until September, October. You know, and I don't think they'll be free and clear to even come to AEW for at least another 12 months. And a lot can happen in a year. But I think right now, both those teams are as good as gone. And they've already got a pretty strong tag team division. You throw in, you know, kind of a motivated Revival, and even Anderson and Gallows. You know, they haven't been used to their full potential either. And that can make the tag team division, I think, even stronger. Shout out to everybody listening live. We've got 2,500 crazy people here on Memorial Day 2019. This is episode 601, special edition, special post-Double or Nothing edition. We are streaming and airing live here on YouTube. Thank you to everybody who has submitted a super chat. I was going to click on one and it just disappeared. See, that's how fast things are going here. But I am seeing all of them. Thank you so much. Super chats are open. And right now I'm going to put up on your screen, you see a phone number. 989-282-SOLO. That's 989-282-7656. I am going to be throwing it to your phone calls in a little bit. I want to hear from you. Those of you who watch Double or Nothing, yay or nay. What did you think of the pay-per-view? Best moments, worst moments. If you didn't like the pay-per-view, why the hell not? So by all means, you can call in and we'll be taking your calls in a little bit here. But first, we've got one more big match to talk about. That's the main event, Chris Jericho against Kenny Omega. Or, as Marv Albert called him during the NBA game the other night, Chris Jericho. How do you fuck up that name? Seriously. It is a biblical name. Like, even if you don't read the Bible, everybody's heard the name Jericho before. You've had TV shows named Jericho. Here in New York, you've got the fucking Jericho Turnpike. It's a pretty common name. And it's not that hard if you, like, even phonetically, you just try to spell it out. And somehow he managed to fuck this up. And I have no idea how that was even possible. It's not even like a wrestling name. Chris Jericho. But it was still a hell of a plug for AEW. Are you kidding me? During the NBA playoffs? Doesn't get better than that. So Jericho had a special entrance that apparently Cody worked with him on. And thank you. Shout out to W.S. Fletcher for that $20 super chat. That's mighty nice of you. Appreciate that. He's been one of our supporters for a long time. Special entrance for Jericho with people dressed up as him, kind of in phases throughout his career. So they had somebody with their back turned dressed up as Lionheart. Then the lights would go out. Lights would come back on. There's somebody dressed up as the List version. In fact, the person was holding the List of Jericho up in front of his face. Lights go out. Then we see the light bright jacket, right? Light up jacket Jericho. Then the lights go out again. And finally, they play Jericho's song Judas, and he comes out in his leather jacket and his hat, looking like something out of a Clockwork Orange, making his entrance. And I thought that this is where Jim Ross really stepped up his performance. I mean, he stepped it up in the Cody and Dustin match as well, but by the main event, we heard signs of the old JR. That emotion, right? That enthusiasm of the old JR. And that enthusiasm that really lends itself to big-time main event matches and gives them that big match feel. Took him a little while to get going. He did. There were some moments during the show where JR was completely lost. In fact, he even said it out loud. I don't know where we are. I don't know what's next. I don't know where we are. And it was kind of embarrassing, but it took him a while to get going. I thought this was one of the matches where he shined the most on this pay-per-view when I went and watched it back, especially by the end. You know, with the big surprise that they saved for the end of this match. And there are a lot of moments during the Attitude Era where people would come out, there'd be a big surprise, and JR would be losing his mind and losing his voice, and he'd be over the top with it sometimes. But those are kind of those iconic moments that a lot of people remember. And I feel like by the end here, we got to see a little bit of that JR back. So Jericho had a sliding dropkick early through the ropes. He grabbed one of the TV cameras outside the ring and started filming Omega. Omega spit water in his face. Somewhere in here, Jericho caught Kenny with a shot to the face that broke his nose. Jericho, when the show was over and he was doing interviews, he didn't even know what it was. He said, look, it's wrestling. Shit happens. So he may have caught him with an errant fist or maybe an elbow. I don't know what it was, but Omega definitely had a broken nose here. He was bleeding, but he fought on. Jericho pulled a table out from under the ring, and Omega hit a dive out of the ring onto the table. Knocked Jericho down in the process. He was underneath the table. Omega then hit a giant double foot stomp off the top rope down onto the table with Jericho underneath, which looked like it sucked for Jericho. And later in the match, that table was set up, or maybe it was a different one, but there was a table set up outside the ring, and Jericho backdropped Omega out over the top and down through the table. Kind of reminded me of the spot in the Omega-Okada match. I want to say the second one. Was it the second? First or second? Match that those two had, and Kenny took a huge backdrop, and that actually was even more dangerous because there's not a whole lot of space between the guardrail and the ring at these New Japan shows, and it was one of those Japanese tables, so you're never really sure if it's going to break or not, and Omega just took this huge backdrop out of the ring, and that's kind of what this reminded me of. Jericho went for the walls. Omega fought out, went for the V-trigger. Jericho did catch him in the walls, even put the leg back at one point, gave him the lion tamer. Omega would not submit. Kenny tried for the one-wing angel. Jericho spun out of it, countered into a DDT. This was their second attempt at that spot because it got botched up a few minutes earlier, so they tried again. And they nailed it. And the finish came when Jericho hit the Judas effect for the win. Now, if you've been paying attention to watching any of the Road to Double or Nothing videos and the build-up to this pay-per-view, Jericho has been training. He's been doing some MMA training to prepare himself for this match, and he was set to unveil a new finisher that he calls the Judas Effect, which is basically it's basically a spinning back elbow. And there's a lot of divided opinion about this. People were, in some cases, very underwhelmed that Jericho won this match fair and square, clean in the middle with a spinning back elbow. I mean, you watch this match and other matches. I mean, look at the Young Bucks and the Lucha Bros. Look at all of the moves, all of the big moves and the finishers and the kickouts and the counters and everything, and they just kept kicking out of things left and right. And I think there is something to be said for, in the very next match, a guy uses a spinning back elbow and just gets the pin. Unfortunately, that's what happens when you are, you know, following matches where it's just a kickout fest in a lot of ways. So I could see where some people would have been underwhelmed by that. But you know what? It's Chris Jericho. This guy got a fucking potted plant over. He got the word it over. He got a scarf over. If anybody can get this move over, It's Chris Jericho. And Chris Jericho's not a young guy anymore compared to everybody else he's working with. He's in his mid to late 40s. He's got to adapt. He's got to adjust. I cringe every time Jericho hits the lion salt. And it's not because he does it poorly or anything like that. It's because I just cannot help but think of Hayabusa. And that one match, and this is a move he had done 1,000 times. And he slipped on the rope, and he landed on his head, and he was paralyzed. And I just feel like every time I see anybody, including Jericho, especially the older he gets, every time I see him hit that move, and he hits it multiple times. I mean, he hit it 3 or 4 different times in this match. You're tempting fate. Because all it takes is one sweaty rope, blood on the rope, your foot slips, and it's just... It seems like such a basic move, but it's actually a very dangerous move. I kind of wish he would kind of abandon it, to be perfectly honest with you. So I personally don't have any issue with him trying a newer, safer move, especially as he is getting a little older. He has to adapt his style. He can't be as flashy as he used to be. So it didn't bother me as much as I know it bothered a lot of other people. But Chris Jericho wins fair and square, clean in the middle of the ring. Now, I figured Jericho was going to win because A, Kenny won the first match, and B, Jericho is wrestling Okada for the IWGP title in 2 weeks. So if anybody was in need of a big win, I think it's Chris Jericho. So I figured he was going to win this anyway. I didn't predict that he was going to win it with that move, you know, fair and square in the middle of the ring like that. But him winning was not really a big surprise. And plus, you know, the match with Hangman Page, it just makes more sense than doing Kenny against Page. So Jericho wins. He gets the microphone. He calls all the fans marks. Says that, I am AEW. This is not a company for you. This is not a company for the fans. It's a company for me. The reason that this building is sold out is because of me. The reason we have a big fat TV deal is because of me. And he demands a thank you from the fans. And he also wants a thank you from AEW. All of a sudden, as he's begging for a thank you, we see a commotion in the crowd. My friend kind of nudged me and said, take a look over there. I turned my head to the right, and what do I see? You saw the video that I shot at the beginning of this review. Jon Moxley, the former Dean Ambrose, doing a kind of an old-school Shield entrance through the crowd. And it was fun to watch, and it felt in the building. It's hard to describe the kind of swell. At first, people didn't know what was going on, but they were cheering. And then it got louder, and then it got louder, and then it got louder. And before long, the building was rumbling. And when he hopped over that barricade, Moxley did, and he rolled into the ring, the place was just losing their minds. This was a great moment, watching it back on TV. Jim Ross, even, I thought, sold it very well. You know, it felt like one of those old school moments where somebody was making a big appearance and JR would kind of lose his mind a little bit. Moxley got into the ring, and instantly before he said a word, before he hit a move, he felt like such a huge star. Bigger than he has felt on WWE television in years. Maybe going all the way back to when he cashed in Money in the Bank on Seth Rollins and won the championship. It's been a long time since Dean Ambrose felt like this big of a deal. But of course, it's not Dean Ambrose. It's Jon Moxley. And I love how everybody is pretty much taken to just calling him Moxley at this. I'm the only idiot left calling him Dean Ambrose. But I'll get used to that as time goes on. So he hit the double underhook DDT on Jericho, and he hit the double underhook DDT to the referee, Paul Turner. Moxley waved at Omega, he helped him up to his feet. He went to go give him a DDT as well. Omega pushed back, they both tumbled through the ropes and out to the floor. And it looked like it kind of sucked for both of them, but especially Ambrose, because he landed on the debris of the table and, you know... Just not a fun landing for him, as I am also putting this person in timeout. Apparently a lot of children out here this morning. You hear the siren outside. See, Dean Ambrose is coming. No. So they fall out of the ring. They engage in this wild brawl. Loud chants of AEW. People were eating this up like dinner. They love this shit. They brawled through the crowd. They brawled over by the stage. They crawled up onto the giant poker chips. And Ambrose gave him the double underhook DDT on top of the poker chips, picked him up, put him on his shoulder, and dumped him down, I'd say, a good 6-7 feet onto the stage below. Kenny is dead. Ambrose is left standing on top of the poker chips, and I thought this was a fine way to go off the air here for their first big pay-per-view event, and it was made official when the show was over. They put the press release out that Moxley is signed to a full-time multi-year contract with AEW. He will make his in-ring debut at Fyter Fest June 29th in Daytona Beach, Florida. And he will also have the freedom to book his own independent dates when he is not being used much by AEW. But before that came the news after midnight that broke on social media this morning. Jon Moxley is heading for New Japan Pro Wrestling. There was a video that started running weeks ago teasing the Time's Up message. It was showing a guy in a bar sitting with his back turned. He was sharpening a knife. There was footage of Juice Robinson. And shout out, by the way, to Wrestling Ranton in our chat for the Super Chat. Thank you, brother. He's sitting at the bar. We can't see who it is, but he's watching. Juice Robinson is being shown on TV. And, of course, Juice is the reigning IWGP United States champion. But they never actually revealed all these weeks who that person is that was coming in. But they were teasing that June 5th, which is the last date of the Super Junior, somebody is coming in. A lot of people thought it was a UK star. Somebody from the UK, the guy had a Union Jack patch on his jacket. Well, after midnight last night, Moxley tweeted out a link to that updated video, which reveals his name at the end of it with the date of June 5th, which, as I said, happens to be the final night of the Best of the Super Juniors tournament in Tokyo. So much like Chris Jericho, it appears that Moxley is not exclusive to AEW and has the power to book his own dates. And New Japan is one of those places that we are going to see him pop up in very soon. And 4 days after this, after his match in Japan, I would think it's against Juice Robinson, but they haven't made that formal yet. But 4 days later, Chris Jericho is challenging Okada for the IWGP title at the Dominion show in Osaka. Moxley against Juice is not even the most appealing match. If you think about potential Moxley matchups in New Japan, my first thought when it comes to this kind of brawler type, Moxley is not known as some kind of great master technician. I automatically think of Minoru Suzuki. He's the first guy I think of. So I think Moxley and Suzuki could be interesting. Moxley and Ishii would be fun to watch. But that's very cool. Moxley in a New Japan ring will take some getting used to. And it's amazing to think of the send-off that this guy got from WWE. Even though they jobbed him out, he was looking up at the lights for most of his matches. Excuse me, they did the Shield reunion stuff. And they really did not go out of their way to bury this guy all that much. There are a lot of people who got buried six ways to Sunday on their way out, but they really didn't do that with Ambrose. And he kept his head down. He did whatever was asked of him. He did business the right way on his way out. But they had all the Shield reunions and the big send-off and the big speech. I mean, all things considered, he had a pretty good send-off. But the key here is Renee Young. His wife is on color commentary on Monday Night Raw each and every week. And she's really not good at it. She's pretty terrible most weeks. But it doesn't highlight her strengths at all. She's a great personality. And she's great on interviews. But as an announcer, she needs a lot more work. Even still. All these people saying, oh, Renee Young is going to be demoted. Or Renee Young is going to pay the price. Or Renee... Do you think they want to lose Renee Young to an AEW or even an ESPN? ESPN had interest in her a few years ago. She chose to stay with WWE. You don't think that there's another network company that wouldn't snatch her up like that in a second if she became available? Whatever you may think of her on commentary, she could be doing any number of things. She doesn't have to be doing commentary for WWE. When SmackDown moves to Fox in the fall, they're going to have basically a talk show on FS1, she would be perfect for that kind of show. So I don't know where all these people are thinking, uh-oh, this is bad news for Renee Young. It may be awkward for her, given that her husband was such a featured part of this show. Shots fired. Yeah, I'm sure it is awkward for her. They're not going to do shit to her. If anything, they're going to go out of their way to be nice to her. They're going to go out of their way to be extra accommodating to her. Because the last thing they want is to lose her. They're not going to bury her. They're not going to embarrass her. They're not going to take her off television. They're going to bend over backwards to make sure that she is as happy as she can possibly be. But it's amazing to look at how Ambrose was booked on his way out when they thought that he really is just going to take time off and go work indies and kind of just do his own thing. And when he's ready to come back, he'll come back. And as soon as he's free, what does he do? He goes to AEW and he goes to New Japan. I actually find it really funny. What's interesting to me is when his contract expired, when the clock struck midnight on, what was it, May 1st, I think. That's when that first video went up. And everybody was like, this video, this is all a work. That video is too well produced to be from anybody else. WWE is going to bring him in and reintroduce him as John Moxley, which was the stupidest thing I had ever heard of, because after all these years of building up Dean Ambrose and the equity they had in that character and that name, why in God's name would Vince McMahon suddenly say, you know what we're going to do? We're going to take this Dean Ambrose guy that we've been building up for years and years, and we're going to take him off TV for a few weeks, and we're going to bring him back under a completely different name. Are you brain dead? Are there people out there who actually believe that to be true? I have to think people were just trolling and looking for attention. Nobody could possibly believe that. But there were people who thought this whole thing was just a work and that he was going to come back as Dean Ambrose. And this was all some kind of red herring or something, but we can put that shit to bed, hopefully. I hope that there isn't anybody who still believes that to be the case. But what I was getting at is, that video was already produced, right? And that went up the moment his contract expired. That means that he made that video with AEW while he was still technically under contract still to WWE. So I wonder, could there be any repercussions? I'm guessing not, but could there be any repercussions from that? Would that be considered tampering in some way? Or would their argument be, well, we didn't have anything to do with it. Didn't air on our show. Ambrose went out and had that video made on his own. Which, of course, is bullshit, I'm sure. But that I found that to be more interesting than anything else. The idea that now we know it was an AEW video and it went up right away. Which means it had to have been made while he was still under contract still to Vince McMahon. So, anyway, they had the post-show media scrum, which I think is a really cool concept. They basically just set the backdrop up with the Double or Nothing and the AEW logo, and they paraded people out there to do interviews. They had Cody, they had Dustin, they had Jericho, all giving interviews when the show was over, like you would see after a UFC show or even a New Japan show. Kind of gave it more of a realistic feel. By all accounts, there were no restrictions on what people could ask. So if you were a wrestling reporter, if you were a wrestling podcaster or whatever, and you were able to get credentials, because you have to be credentialed to get in, but there were no limits. You could just walk up and ask whatever question you want, which is the polar opposite of how it is in WWE, where they are very, very particular about what you can and cannot ask. And if, some talents do phone interviews, they have the WWE PR person is on the line in the background, and you only have this much time, you can't ask about that. They're very, and they don't even grant access to a lot of the wrestling media at all. That's why, when Leo Rush gave that interview to Sean Ross Sapp and Fightful, he may well have sealed his fate with that interview. That's just not, and he's under contract to WWE giving an interview talking about stuff that happens behind the scenes. You just don't do that. I'm sure he got blowback from that. This is a different approach. This is more of a, hey, we want you guys to feel that you're included. Come on in, we'll give you access, ask whatever questions you want. At least on night one, they were very media friendly. Now, will that continue going forward? Maybe not. Maybe if people start asking the wrong questions, it might not. But that was kind of refreshing to see. And yes, Mark Henry, it was so weird. Mark Henry was there, because Mark Henry now is one of the hosts or co-hosts on the Busted Open radio show on Sirius. I don't know if he's on the show every day, but he's on multiple times during the week. So he's a host now, right? He's retired. He's in the Hall of Fame. Now he's doing the host thing. He's there with all these other, Dave Meltzer is standing here asking questions. Mark Henry butts, it doesn't take a lot for him to kind of work his way to the front of the line. And he gets the mic in front of Cody. Cody, I got a question. And Cody stops in his tracks like, I will listen to whatever your question is right now. And I will answer whatever questions you have for me. And Mark's just going around asking questions like a roving reporter. The only thing he was missing was like a jacket and the fucking notepad in his hand. So that was kind of funny to see. I had access to the after party. They were having an after party back at Caesar's Palace. And I was looking forward to it because, yeah, this was going to be our last night before we flew back to New York. And I was hoping that maybe it would be a fun atmosphere, get some music and whatever. And I walk in and I have to say, I walk into this after party and they had a band performing and there were just a bunch of wrestling fans standing around and the longest lines that I've ever seen in my life to get to the bar if anybody wanted a drink or anything. And it's just this giant room with a bunch of wrestling fans standing around. And there were some wrestlers filtering in as the night went on. But I walked in and said, man, this is lame as hell. And I turned around, I walked right back out. I said, well, this is a pretty shitty way for my trip to end. Now, I hope it got better as the night went on. Maybe I left early and it got better. I hope so. But as far as after parties go, I was not overly impressed. But the other big announcement they made on the show is that there will be a sequel. And by the way, to Steve in the chat, no, Wale, I don't believe, was at this party. If he was, I would have stayed. But no, I don't think he was there. But they made the announcement that the sequel to All In is All Out. And All Out is coming back to the Sears Center in Chicago August 31st. I believe that's Labor Day weekend. So that's going to be their next big pay-per-view. And the question now turns to, will we see an appearance by CM Punk? There were people who thought CM Punk might be on this show. And it turned out not to be the case. And of course, they had Moxley lined up and Bret Hart and Awesome Kong. And that's perfectly fine as far as big surprises. You don't want to blow your load on the first show. They've got All Out. They've got their first TNT show coming up on television this fall. That would be the time, if they can strike some kind of a deal with CM Punk, to bring him in. Because even if you hate Punk, even if you don't care for the guy, you never liked him, you think he's an asshole, he abandoned the fans, fuck him, whatever your opinion is of CM Punk, he's still a big name. And there are still people who ask about him all these years later, who talk about him all these years later. The itch is still there. He'll still make these appearances under a mask at indie shows. There's no, when you're a wrestling fan and it's in your blood, it's in your blood. You know, he may have been away from it for a long time, but there's no way that it's not still, there's not still a piece of him that would love to come back and kind of end his career the right way and not go out the way that he did with a whimper, the way he did in WWE. And he has been friendly in the past with the Bucks, so there's already a relationship there. Tony Khan was asked about it in the post-show interview section, and he said, look, I've got a good relationship with Phil, as he called him, and he would love to, you know, potentially do business with him at some point. When he sketched out his original roster of who he wanted, Punk was on that first roster. Now, he says he pretty much got everybody else that he wanted. Punk would be the one guy that he has not gotten. And I don't see any reason for Punk, frankly, not to show up. Either in Chicago, which would be the perfect place, going to be in his backyard at All Out, or he could be the Lex Luger, what Lex Luger was on that first Nitro at the Mall of America. Punk could be that for the first AEW show on TNT. And he could show up and he could be a big surprise. If I'm them, I am working overtime. Because that would be a big name for them to get. That would be a big get for them. And it's going to be very important for them to generate a lot of buzz when they debut on television. Want to get that rating up. Punk is somebody who I think for them is a must. So that's going to be an interesting story to follow. There is also going to be a StarCast 3 that's been officially announced also for All Out Weekend at the end of August. And here Conrad originally said he was only going to do one of these. And now he's getting ready to do number 3. Here's one other thought that I had, and then I'm going to... I want to talk a little bit about Owen Hart, actually, because this was a big kind of anniversary weekend. And then we'll just take some of your calls and wrap up here. Save that for the end. All you people still listening, we got over 2,300 of you. Thank you for tuning in. This is episode 601 of the Solomonster Sounds Off. But I was thinking, you know, Chris Jericho is having his second cruise in January. The Jericho Cruise leaves out of Miami, sets sail for Nassau in the Bahamas. It's a week-long thing. I've never been on a cruise of any kind in my entire life. I've had people tell me, oh, you gotta go on a cruise, man. It's great. They got so many different activities, and the ship is so huge, and the food. And I just haven't been. And I didn't go on the first Jericho cruise, and I had some friends say to me, hey, you know, we're going to get the group together. Maybe we'll go on this second one. And so I agreed. So I'm going on the Jericho cruise in January, and that's going to be a rough week, because when I get back at the end of that week, I believe that weekend is the Royal Rumble, which is always a shit show for me in terms of just recording and getting ready for that show. But I was thinking, you know, now that Jericho is officially a part of the AEW roster, and they're going to get this big television show on TNT. And, you know, Nitro used to do those spring break shows from Panama City Beach and Club La Vila and all those places. Now, logistically, maybe there's a reason they can't. But boy, how cool would it be for them to either go live or tape television aboard the ship on the Jericho cruise? I don't see any reason for them not to, unless logistically there's simply no way for them to do it. And that's possible, but I think they'd be foolish not to at least attempt to tape television on that ship. Maybe somebody throws somebody overboard. Stranger things have happened. I still remember when Big Show threw Scott Hall in the pool on that Spring Break Nitro. So anyway, we'll see what happens come next January. That just I think would be a fun idea. And talk about a unique setting. I was just talking about that before, right? Custom sets. You know, changing things up a little bit. Doesn't get any more different than that. You tape TV aboard the ship. That'd be pretty cool. But I did want to just address one other thing real quick here, which is, again, kind of sad. And that is that this was the 20-year anniversary this week of the death of Owen Hart. Owen Hart passed away at the Over the Edge pay-per-view. I believe it was May 23rd, 1999 was the date. And I had met Owen one time. I met Owen less than a year before he died. It was the very first Monday Night Raw I ever went to. I won tickets to a luxury box at the Continental Airlines Arena, which later became the Izod Center in New Jersey. And before the show, they sent four wrestlers to the box to meet with us in private, take pictures, sign autographs. And the four names that we got were Owen Hart, Mick Foley, and this was just a few weeks after the Hell in a Cell match, so this guy looked like fucking death warmed over. He didn't have he had the Mankind attire up, but not the mask. So it was Owen, Foley, Mark Henry, who I just mentioned, and the late Luna Vachon. So unfortunately, two of the four are no longer with us. Luna could not have been nicer, and I had met Luna once before. Luna just was the nicest lady. Mark Henry was cool. He and Owen, I think, were both in the Nation at the time. And Owen and Foley were just kind of, as they're signing autographs, they were chatting with each other about their kids and their families and stuff. And so, yeah, got some pictures. And as the wrestlers were filing out of the luxury box to go into the next one next door, Owen stopped. He was the last one out. He stopped in the doorway. Nobody was paying attention to him at this point. Everybody was just buzzing about what had just happened. And he turned around and he said, "Anybody need pictures? Anybody want pictures?" And nobody was even paying attention to him. I saw him. And had to build up enough courage to kind of put my hand up and say, "Yeah, I'd love to get a picture." And so I got to take a picture with Owen Hart. So in my brief interaction with him, couldn't have been a nicer guy. And that was less than a year before he passed away. Now, I want to give a shout out to John Pollock. John Pollock over at Post Wrestling, he recorded an audio documentary on Owen's final day. It's about 45 minutes long. And interspersed in there were clips from various interviews that have been done with people over the years, Jim Ross's commentary that night from the pay-per-view. He puts sprinkles little clips like that into the documentary. It's not just him narrating the entire time. And there were things I learned listening to that documentary that I never knew before that actually made me angrier at Vince McMahon and WWE about the situation. Now, we already knew from Brett and others who knew Owen that Owen was very apprehensive about doing this stunt falling from the ceiling. He had done it at least once before. And that was some of the most jarring audio, by the way, that Pollock played in this audio documentary. And you should be able to download it if you go to postwrestling.com. It's very well done. They played audio from the first time that Owen had descended from the ceiling. He was doing the Blue Blazer gimmick. It was a comedy gimmick. And the idea was that he was lowered about halfway down from the ceiling and then got stuck. Couldn't get all the way down. And you had Jim Cornette on commentary with Michael Cole. What a combo that was. And they're mocking Owen. Look at this guy. What an idiot. He's hanging from the ceiling. He's stuck. Look at this. He's hanging there. And it's eerie to now go back and listen to them kind of making fun of the whole situation. So he had done the stunt once before and just was very nervous and didn't want to do it again. He was going to wrestle the Godfather. He was going to win the Intercontinental Championship at the pay-per-view that night. They interview a fan. I don't know who the fan's name is. At the time, I believe he was living in the St. Louis area. He, I guess, was one of these fans who the wrestlers knew of. I don't know if he hung around the wrestlers. Sometimes he would give them like a ride from the airport to the building. People knew who he was. Some of the wrestlers knew who he was. And the plan was not for him to pick up Owen from the airport, but I guess he was there. Owen saw him and just kind of went to the guy's car and just said, okay, let's go. You know, like, hey, let's go to the building. And so he was driving Owen. And Owen, you know, they wanted to do a run-through of the stunt beforehand, and he just wanted no part of it. He wanted no part of it whatsoever. He left the building, got in the car with the guy and said, let's go. Let's go eat. Let's go grab lunch. I'll go to the gym. He's trying to avoid all these people who are texting or calling him on his cell phone, figuring, well, if I'm not there and they can't get a hold of me to rehearse this, they may just have to abandon the whole stunt altogether. Until finally Vince McMahon calls him, and he takes the call and hangs up. The guy says, what was that about? He goes, well, that was Vince McMahon. He goes, I've got two choices here. I either have you drive me back to the building so we could do the rehearsal for this thing, or I don't go back, and I'm out of a job. And I don't know if Vince said to him, you're going to be out of a job, but in his mind, if I don't go back to the building, these guys might fire me, and I got to support my family. So he told the guy, take me back to the building. Take me back to Kemper. And he took him back, and so that was kind of just seeing how apprehensive he was, even more so than I had been led to believe before, was very jarring. Now, they talked about the rigging and the people who were running the equipment and helping out with the stunt. WWE had used a certain person previously for stunts like this. Somebody who was very experienced and did it a certain way. And I guess they did not want to use this guy this time because it would have cost too much money. So to save money, and this may have been, I don't know if this may have been the same person who did all of Sting's stunts in WCW. It may have been the same guy. Too much money. They don't want to pay for it. Instead, they went with a different person out of a different state. And this person had claimed that, I think what it was is that this person had claimed he had assisted in WCW with the Sting stunts. It turned out that he was just an assistant. He was not actually the person who was sort of running the show, so to speak. He was an assistant. He helped out a few times as an assistant. And he had a different way, different, like a different hook or a different clasp. There was something different about the quick release, maybe that it was, mechanism that he was going to use. The other person who WWE would normally use, the experienced guy, said that he would never, ever lower a human being with that particular mechanism from the building. He wouldn't do it. And WWE did not go with him for the stunt on that night. So you hear these stories, and it just makes you angry to think this all could have been so easily avoided. I mean, who knew what was going to happen? But this could have been so easily avoided. And if Owen was this deathly afraid of doing this stunt, why did he not? Owen was a veteran in that company. He wasn't a rookie. He wasn't like a Joe Schmo. And he felt like he couldn't speak up, or it could jeopardize his job. Here's the other thing I didn't know. We almost lost two people that night, because the original plan was to lower Owen from the ceiling with Max Mini on his back. Now, Max Mini was a mini wrestler at the time who was on TV for WWE. Not every week, but they were going to dress him up as a mini blazer, like a mini blue blazer. And the idea was that he would be on Owen's back. They would lower the two of them from the ceiling. And when they were, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 feet off the ground, they would get stuck. And maybe they would take a pratfall and they would fall 5 or 6 feet down to the ground. Total comedy, total joke. That was the original plan. And they had to do a test beforehand where they put like a sandbag on Owen's back just to make sure with the added weight that it would work out. Whatever the reason was, right before they went on the air, they decided to cut Max Mini out of the stunt. They were not going to have Max Mini on Owen's back. If he was on Owen's back, that's two deaths instead of one. Could he have lived potentially? Maybe Owen would have broken his fall. I guess anything's possible. But you got to remember, Owen fell 78 feet from the ceiling. He didn't fall 10 feet, 20 feet, 78 feet. There's nobody who could have survived that. That would have been two deaths. And I wonder then if Vince McMahon would have stopped the show, or would he have kept it going? There could have been three deaths too. Referee Jimmy Corderas, they interview him as well. He was in the ring. He felt something brush by him. If he was over a couple of inches, Owen would have fallen right on top of him. He would have been a goner too. We could have potentially had three deaths in the ring in one fell swoop. And I still wonder to myself, would Vince McMahon have kept the show going? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. I would certainly hope at that point you cancel the show. But this is Vince McMahon that we're talking about here. And there's that mentality that the show must go on. Thankfully, their lives were spared. Owen's, not so much. And it's a very sad story even to this day. You know, everyone talks about the Benoit stuff when it comes to the great wrestling tragedies. And it was, you know, three people lost their lives, including an innocent child through no fault of his own. But Owen is still up there, right next to it. If it's not number one, it's number two as one of the all-time great wrestling tragedies. You know, two kids and a wife, and all for what? For some stupid comedy stunt that he didn't even want to do in the first place. So it kind of made me angry listening to it, but it actually is a very well done special. I did learn some things from it. Again, John Pollock over at Post Wrestling. For those of you who are interested, that is where you can find it. Let's take some of your calls. I know a lot of people are waiting in queue, so we'll take some calls here, get some interaction going, and then we'll wrap things up here for episode 601. Of the Solomonster Sounds Off. Let's go right now to Jimmy in Virginia.
Hey, Solomonster, how you doing, man?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Doing pretty good. I wanted to know, how do you think Dixie Carter, Eric Bischoff, and Jeff Jarrett feel about AEW's TV deal? Because pretty much they accomplished something that they tried for years to do and couldn't get it accomplished.
Well, that's a great question. I would like to think that they're happy for them, that they see the same need that all of us do for there to be some legitimate competition, not on a network that people can't find, but on a real channel. And then I'm sure part of them also, and Jeff Jarrett may feel the same way, because he tried with Global Force Wrestling for a while and couldn't get a good TV deal. I'm sure there's probably a lot of frustration, you know? If only it were me, if only I had the chance, I could have been the one to, you know, try to overtake Vince McMahon. I don't know what thoughts are going through their head right now. I would hope, though, that if they are wrestling fans and they are a fan of competition, that they would be happy that somebody finally was able to break through. Because aside from them being on a major network like NBC, ABC or something, this is as big as it gets. TNT is one of the top cable networks. It's right up there with USA and TBS and just some of the biggest cable stations in the country. For those of you who don't live in this country and don't even know what TNT is or where they rank, I think, only slightly behind USA in terms of total viewership. And were it not for WWE, TNT would be kicking USA's ass every single week. So there's definite competition between those two networks. I would hope that they're happy. That would be my hope. Let's go to Rob in Dallas here on the air.
Hey, how you doing, Jason?
Good. How are you, Rob?
I'm good. Overall, how would you say your trip to Las Vegas was, other than some of the minor fallout that you had? That's all I had to say. And congratulations.
Thank you, man, and happy Memorial Day to you. As far as the Vegas trip is concerned, I never miss an opportunity. I don't go to Vegas very often. My second time ever in Vegas. Yeah, my first trip to Vegas was six years ago for my best friend's bachelor party. I pretty much peaked at that point. Like, there's no point. There's probably no point other than wrestling and even bothering to go back to Vegas after that. Once you've had that experience, it's kind of hard to top with all the craziness. But when I knew it was coming to Vegas, I said, look, it's just a great way to get away from New York and, you know, get some nice weather. And I haven't been there in so long. So I wanted to do other stuff as much as any of the wrestling stuff. You know, that's why I didn't set up shop and do a live show from StarCast or anything like that, because I didn't want to be bothered. You know, you've got to commit yourself. You got to sit at a table. You can't move around. You got to record. Like, who needs that? It's a pain in the ass. I can record at the hotel if I really wanted to, you know, or wait. Like now, I'm doing a live stream here at home. That gives me more time to get out and enjoy my trip. So I, on the whole, had a great time, great food. I'm a lot fatter now than I was when I left. We'll have to work that off. Let's go to Jacob in Springfield, Missouri.
Hey, Solomon Monster. Happy Memorial Day.
Thank you.
Glad that you had a good time up at StarCast up there. A lot of questions about that, and I'll get to my quick thoughts on the show. Kind of cool that you got to meet some cool people and personalities there. Like, you got to meet the Cultaholic people there. They're pretty entertaining. But another individual I was kind of hoping for, and this was my question to you during the 600th episode, was if you got a chance to meet Sean Oliver. And he was really interested in your work. Like, I sent a tweet out the other day about your work, and he was very interested in your podcast, and he was down some chance if you guys were a chance to meet or interview sometime. I thought that'd be pretty cool.
No, very nice. I'm happy to hear that, because he does some of the best shoot interviews anywhere, wrestling-wise anyway, some of the best shoot interviews that I've ever seen.
Yeah, so I thought it'd be pretty cool if you got a chance to bump into each other, maybe at the next StarCast if you do choose to go to Chicago. But, yeah, I just want to get my quick thoughts on the pay-per-view. I thought it was a very good show. I didn't think it was quite as good as All In, though, but like the main event was a lot better. Jericho Omega was good. The tag match was a lot of fun, but I guess that'd be my main question to you. Is, did you think the show topped All In, or do you think All In was still a better pay-per-view?
I enjoyed this show more than All In, maybe slightly. And maybe I'm biased because I wasn't at All In, but I was there live for this one. So being in the building live, from the production to the matches and just, I don't know, the feel of the atmosphere, it felt like, I mean, All In was special, don't get me wrong. An event like that, an independently kind of hosted event in a big building like that with some of those big names, has really, in that way, never been done before. And that was a historic event. This was the kickoff to something new. You know, this was the beginning of something new in wrestling that hopefully will thrive and do well and will just make wrestling more fun and more enjoyable on the whole. So it felt like you were part of history being there in the building. And there really wasn't what I would consider to be a bad match on the entire show. So it was similar to All In a lot of ways, but I think I would give this show the edge. We have Ricardo in New Jersey.
Hey, Solomon, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you, sir?
I'm good. Happy Memorial Day to you. Quick comments on the All In show as well. Like, I agree with you that it was a lot better. It was slightly better than All In in Chicago. And one of the things that made all this show really good to me was, it did feel like the alternative that we're looking for. It felt like it didn't feel like to be light. It didn't feel like anything else. And a part of that, and I think you saw it too on Twitter, was the fact that it's connecting to other people. Like, for example, the tweet or the retweet I saw of AOC, I think, Congresswoman AOC, retweeting something that Cody Rhodes mentioned in an interview that he had after the show. And I wanted to get your take of how influential is social media in regards to making AEW possible. Do you think without how they've used social media, YouTube with being the lead, all these things, those factor in as how important it was for them to have the deal that they have and how AEW was created?
So as far as, you mean social media, as far as how influential it's been in the creation of AEW?
Yeah, like if it wasn't for how they use social media, because they used being the lead and all these other platforms, do you think without them, those platforms, AEW wouldn't exist now with how they used it?
Yeah, that's a great question. It changes the game. You know, this did not exist 20 years ago or 30 years ago when WWE was having its golden era and the Attitude Era took off. WCW overtook WWE. There was no Twitter. There was no Facebook. The internet was still pretty much in its infancy at that point. I mean, the Netscape browser came along in 95, right? That's the same year Nitro came along. So the world is just very different now, and I think social media is going to have a lot to do with the success of the company and has a lot to do with where we are now. Look at the Being the Elite series. You know, YouTube would have to be considered part of social media as well. That series has been wildly successful for them and was really the way that people were keeping up on the storylines heading into this pay-per-view. The build-up to all of the key matches, there were storylines that people were following along every single week on the Road to Double or Nothing series, on Being the Elite. They relied on YouTube and social media to advance these stories and get people hyped up and excited for this pay-per-view. And then when something big happens, like a Dean Ambrose popping up as Jon Moxley at the end of a show, or if Cody Rhodes makes a comment and a congresswoman decides to retweet it, you know, that's just the kind of thing we didn't see back in the day. And that's how you generate a buzz. So yeah, I think social media is going to be very important to AEW and embracing it, and not, you know, if somebody posts a clip of something having an account shut down or anything like that, I think they need to be very social media friendly, just like they were media friendly this weekend to a lot of the reporters and writers who came in for the show. And I think that's going to work to their advantage. Let's go to Jason in D.C.
Hey, Salamasa, how you doing today? Happy Memorial Day.
Happy Memorial Day.
Question. From the pay-per-view, I saw a lot of WWE stars commenting on that they were watching the pay-per-view and they loved it and everything, and pretty much, you know, giving their feedback and putting a plug in. Do you think any of those wrestlers will get disciplined for doing that?
I would hope not. I mean, I saw that report about Vince McMahon is furious and WWE talents talking about the pay-per-view. And I don't know where that came from. I call bullshit on that report. I'm not saying he's happy about it, but be very weary of any kind of news reports that you see about Vince McMahon was furious and this and that. Because look, at the end of the day, there's nothing wrong with these guys going on their social media accounts and saying, hey, good luck. You know, we had Xavier Woods go on his Twitter and post a picture from when New Day and the Elite had their little face-off at one of the video game conventions just last year, which I'm shocked that went off and wasn't canceled right before. But, you know, he went on there and basically said, you know, good luck. Big E, who's become a Twitter star, had his little way of wishing them luck. He basically said, looking forward to Redacted. Good luck to Redacted. That was his way of wishing them luck. Sasha Banks was chiming in. She clearly was watching the pay-per-view based on the comments that she was posting. And I'll tell you this, without knowing for sure, and this is just me talking here, I don't have an in, I can't tell you for sure, but I will bet you dollars to donuts that the vast majority of the WWE roster was watching that show on Saturday night. And NXT. The NXT roster, the WWE roster. I mean, Matt Riddle doesn't give a fuck. Matt Riddle came out a week or two ago, point blank, and said, when the TNT news came out about AEW, and said, this is great, competition is awesome, thank you so much, guys. And everybody was going after Matt, thinking, oh my god, this guy's so crazy, he's out of his mind, what's he doing? Because he doesn't give a shit. Because he hasn't been infected yet by the WWE machine, where he has to walk on eggshells like everybody else, and he's worried about losing his job. You know why a guy like Matt Riddle is in pole position right now? And I was talking to a friend about this. If Matt Riddle would have waited just a little bit longer, and I thought he was a great get, great pickup for WWE, had he waited just a little bit longer, man, he could have made a lot more money than whatever it is that he signed for, and he would have been the perfect get for an AEW to get a guy like him and build around as one of their top stars. And he knows that his value is just sky high now. So what's WWE going to do? What are they going to do? So he posted a tweet saying he's excited about there being competition now. What are they going to do? They're going to fine him? They're going to take him off TV? They're going to bend him over their knee and spank his ass? What are they going to do to him? They're not going to do shit. They can be upset. They could be disappointed. We don't want our talent doing this. They don't have the right to tell their talent what they can and cannot tweet about. Unless it's something offensive, if they're posting, you know, something that's insensitive, racial, or a curse word, something like that might be different. But at the same time, they can't go to their talent and say, oh, you wish them good luck. You can't do that. I can't do, oh, really? I can't do that? I didn't know I was living in a third world country here. I can't do that? And now you're getting into the whole independent contractor, employee issue, and all that, which is a fucking farce. But this notion that, what's WWE going to do? WWE is not going to do jack shit to these people. Because they can't. They don't have the right to tell people, you can't wish good luck to AEW. You can't comment on AEW getting a television deal. You know, Stephanie McMahon brought up AEW in a talent meeting about a week or two ago, apparently. There was a big backstage meeting, and she brought up AEW. She was talking about the fact that, you know, just so you guys know, competition is more than just AEW. We're competition with the NBA, and we're competition with this, and we're competition with that. And they're not wrong. You know, the Raw ratings being down, some of that is due to the NBA playoffs. And when there's a big NBA game or a big World Series game or something, sometimes they'll try to load it up, or they'll try to time their segments in such a way where Roman Reigns walks out as soon as they go to commercial or something during the ball game. So yes, absolutely, they are competitive with all of those other sports and all of those other forms of television. But I always laughed at this notion that, well, you know, TNA is not really, you know, we're competition with everything. They would go out of their way. They don't want, they so badly do not want to be lumped in with these other wrestling promotions. Because remember, wrestling is a dirty word to these people. And that's why this is a real opportunity for an AEW to come along and say, you know what, we're not ashamed to be professional wrestling. Yes, we're entertainment as well. They're probably going to sign Joey Ryan, the dick guy. It's not like it's just going to be pure pro wrestling. A little bit of entertainment in there, a little bit of comedy in there is fine. Nothing wrong with that. But this is their opportunity to stake their flag in the ground and say, you know what, if those people are too ashamed to admit what they are, we're not going to be that way. We're going to embrace it. We're gonna take over that ground. If they don't want it, they want to cede that ground to somebody else, we'll be more than happy to take over that ground. When WWE's Twitter account put a tweet out the other day, I forgot, they were promoting some kind of charity event. And they opened this tweet. I could not believe it when I saw, I guess I could, given who we're talking about here. But they posted a tweet that said, sports entertainment enthusiasts are going to love this. And I'm like, do you know, like, how much effort had to go into crafting that tweet? Sports entertainment enthusiast. Who talks like this? Sports entertainment enthusiasts. Okay, well, that's cool. I'm happy for the sports entertainment enthusiasts. But what about wrestling fans? Are they excited too? Because I thought they were one and the same. Silly me. Sports entertainment enthusiasts. They are so embarrassed and ashamed by what they do because they just want to be considered highbrow entertainment. I want to be lumped in with all these other sports and all these other, you know, that they just, they forget who they are and where they're from sometimes. And sometimes it's okay to say wrestling fans. It's okay to say professional wrestling. It does not have to be a dirty word. But in the eyes of Vince McMahon, that's exactly what it is. And along comes AEW, and guess what? They're not ashamed to call themselves professional wrestling. Because that's what it is. Everybody knows it's entertainment, but it's pro wrestling. And there isn't a fucking person in this world, a casual fan, who will ever, as long as any of us live, there is not a single person on the face of this earth who will ever go to their friend or their family member and say, hey, you want to go check out the sports entertainment matches tonight? Because you know what would happen if that person did that? They would get smacked right across the face. So this is a real opportunity for an AEW to come along and say, you know what, we're proud of who we are. And you should be too. And now we're going to give you a product that you could be proud of and you can enjoy. And you could be entertained by. And not be bored to tears by. Or be ashamed by. That's the opportunity that they have here. Let's go to Elijah in Fresno, California.
You had me a little scared after that sports entertainment comment.
Oh, my God. I'm all, my blood pressure is so high right now.
Sports entertainment, God damn it.
God damn it, pal.
Hello, Jason.
Hello.
So I'd like to ask about the AEW title, since right now it's going to be Jericho versus Hangman. But I feel like after the events of Double or Nothing, it could probably turn into a four-way, you know, add Omega and Moxley. So, say it does, who do you make your first champion? Who do you make that guy who's going to represent AEW when they get onto TNT?
That's a good question. You know, a big part of me thinks that it needs to be a native talent to AEW and not just an ex-WWE guy. I do like the idea of it being someone like a Jericho just because he does have a certain stature, he does have a certain profile, and then once he wins the championship, it becomes, you know, the chase, which is so important in wrestling, whether it's Omega who chases after him and tries to get his win back from Double or Nothing, or if it's Adam Page, who clearly they're positioning as one of the next big stars. There is something to be said about the babyface chasing the heel and then getting that big win. So I'd be fine if they put the championship on Jericho, actually. If it is one-on-one, Jericho and Hangman Page, I put the title on Jericho. I just don't think Page is at that level yet. Now, if they do change it into a four-way and Omega's in the match and Moxley is in the match, you can't go wrong with either one of those guys. But if you do open it up, I think, to all of them, I probably would be more inclined to go with Omega at that point, but I don't see them doing that. That's just a total WWE thing for them to do. Let's turn it into a multi-man match. That's one of the things I would like to see less. Like in AEW, it's fine to have some tag team matches or six-man tags, but don't overdo it. You know what I mean? The way the WWE does. Everything turns into a tag team, a triple threat, fatal four-way, six-pack chat. We don't need that. One-on-one. One-on-one. That's all you need. So if it's Jericho and Hangman Page, I'm making Chris Jericho my first AEW champion. Drew in Albany.
Hey, Jason. Thank you for taking my call. Sorry it beeped and I didn't really know if I was on the line. But
that's okay.
Happy Memorial Day. And my question to you is, the guy before me just actually asked my first question, but my second question relating to wrestling in general is WWE, you know, it seems to be that they have a lot of talent that's being underused. Of course, we see it every week. I watch every week with my wife, and she's a casual, and even she sees it. So, you know, it's tough to say that a lot of these talents are, you know, just stuck in limbo, right? I'm saying if there is someone to possibly leave to go next to this company, that seems a little bit more raw, a little bit more gutter, less PG, I guess is the best way to put it. Who would you think is going to go? I know Tony Khan said that he got the roster he wanted. He didn't really want to veer away from grabbing everyone from WWE just to make it seem like they were a grab bag from that company. But would it be a Rusev? Would it be a, I don't know. You know, you're more informed with this shit than I am. And I really thought that would be an interesting question just because who's a possible name? Rusev's in limbo over there. He doesn't do much. And, you know, but thank you for taking my call too, dude.
Well, thank you for calling in, man. I appreciate that. I was having that conversation with my buddy Mike the other day. We were talking about, okay, Punk aside, because Punk is obviously, that would be the big get for them. And there was even talk about Goldberg and, you know, would AEW has possible interest in Goldberg and Batista, and that didn't really go anywhere. You kind of run out of names at that point when you think of who would be that other big name that they could go after and snatch up, you know, that would really be meaningful for an AEW. And I think the well runs dry at that point. Now you get into people, like you said, there's Rusev and there's people kind of middling around in the middle of the card who clearly are very frustrated in WWE with their position. Shinsuke Nakamura, I believe, just re-signed with WWE, I believe, so I don't think he's going anywhere anytime soon. I don't think the answer is very obvious, frankly. And I also think they have to be careful and don't just bring in WWE people. You know, like they had on the pre-show, they had Sammy Guevara, you know, wrestling against Kip Sabian. Now, who knows who Kip Sabian is, right? But the more you feature him and the more he's on the television show, hopefully people will become accustomed to him. And people will start to really take notice of this roster. It's no different when WCW was starting to carve out Nitro as a must-see show on Monday nights. You know, when the Cruiserweights were out there and some of these guys, you know, who knew who they were? If you were a hardcore, like a tape trader at the time, you probably knew who a lot of those guys were. But when it came to, like, Psychosis and Juventud Guerrera and La Parca, yes, there were people who followed, you know, AAA or CMLL who may have heard those names before. I didn't know who they were. But the more I watched them, you know, and the guy would come out, he would use the steel chair as a guitar. I go, that's pretty funny. I want to see more of this guy. You know, we all know what Bret Hart thinks of El Dandy. He thinks he's a jam-up guy. So the more that we got to hear about these wrestlers, the more familiar with them we got, you know, the bigger stars they became. So you got Moxley. Great. If they could get Punk, huge coup. And 6 months from now or a year from now, who knows whose contract may be coming due in WWE. If you said to me, hey, Solomonster, Dolph Ziggler's contract is coming up. Do you think that WWE should go after him, or AEW rather, should go after him? It's not that I don't think Ziggler doesn't have anything to offer, but that's not someone I'm jumping at to sign. I don't want to say I would never sign Dolph Ziggler, but I can't get overly excited about that. And if I'm going to take people away from WWE, it's got to be somebody who I think could really make a difference. I think Ambrose could be a difference maker. I think Punk could be a difference maker. I think if someone, obviously like an AJ Styles who ended up staying, he could have been a huge difference maker bringing him in. But you got to be careful not to pick too many people from WWE because TNA made that mistake. And you don't just want to be the land where all the WWE guys go to. Go to Eddie in New York City. You're on the air.
Dollar Master, what's going on there, buddy?
Crazy Eddie is on the phone. Eddie, every time I see Eddie, he tries to, I don't know if you're like trying to get me drunk and do something to me or what, but he's always buying me a shot of this or a shot of that. And I'm like, dude, I have to pay attention to the show. I'm going over to Barclays. I don't want to be stumbling into the arena.
Man, just consider that a reward.
So Double or Nothing was cool. I like it. I felt it. It was cool. It was something different. The announcing, though, goddamn, it's so bad. Jim Ross had some cool moments, though. The guy with the mask is pretty good. I liked him. He had that strong shit about him that, you know, he was cool. And they made Dean Ambrose feel like a big deal. They really did not drop the ball on Dean Ambrose. They did what WWE cannot do. And they made Dean Ambrose feel like the biggest fucking shit in the whole show. So that was cool. But a question is, what things do you think AEW can use from WWE? Like, what things can they use, like, from them? Like, obviously, they're announcing to, like, get fixed. Like, what can they use?
Besides their talent, I think, look, WWE has been successful for a long time. WWE makes a lot of money. WWE is in a position now where even though their creative is pretty much shit and a lot of their shows are tough to get through, they have more money than they've ever had before. You know, they could probably take the AEW roster and buy and sell them five times over if they wanted to. I think there's more that they could learn from WWE not to do, because from watching this first show, they got a lot of the basics down pretty damn well, from the set to the production to... You know, they got the 20 by 20 ring. Some people were worried it might be 18 by 18. It's going to look small on TV. Nope, it's the 20 by 20 ring. And Tony Khan apparently timed the entire show himself backstage, which is something that Gerald Briscoe used to do in WWE. I think Billy Kidman now does it. And it could be tough, you know, because you got to time segments just right so you don't go over. And, you know, you've only got a certain allotted time that you got to get all your shit in. So I thought, on the whole, there was definitely some production miscues and missed camera shots, and the announcing has to improve. But for a first effort, for a first show, not counting All In, which was more of a Ring of Honor production, I thought they did a hell of a job. And what they can now do going forward, as somebody tweeted Jim Ross, I think he was like, JR, if I want to be a writer on your creative team in AEW, how do I apply? And Jim Ross just responded like, LOL, with like a cowboy hat emoji. I don't think he was making fun of the guy, like, huh, you're going to work for us. But I think it's more what we've heard from Cody before. They're not going to have a creative team. This is going to be very different. And that could be very challenging for them because they're going to have a 2-hour television show every single week. Now, they may not have pay-per-views every month. Cody said, we're not doing every month pay-per-views, which I think is a great move. But if they're going to be on television 52 weeks a year, you know, and have 2 hours on the air, and you don't have a formal writing team, it's going to be interesting to see how that's going to work. I like the idea of kind of giving a little more power to the wrestlers, and that you go to the guy and say, look, creatively speaking, what's your thought on this? What's your idea? Take ideas from different people. You know, some of them you use, some of them you don't. But you're not assigning all of this to a writer who comes from a completely different world other than wrestling. Well, this guy was a soap opera writer, and he doesn't really watch WWE, but here, he's going to write a promo for Dustin Rhodes. Are you fucking kidding me? That shit ain't going to fly in AEW. And I liked it when I heard Cody say that for the first time. We're not going to have writers. We're going to do things differently around here. The people, the performers themselves, they know their characters better than anybody else. The power should be in their hands to at least offer feedback and suggestions. How I'm going to say this, how I'm going to do that. And sometimes you may have to put your foot down and say, listen, we got a show to run here and you're not going over. Or we have a show to run here. You can't say that. You can't say that on TNT. But you could say this instead. And you have that back and forth. Give them the creative freedom the way that guys 20, 25 years ago had the creative freedom. So they can learn from the things that WWE, I think, does wrong and do it a different way. And scripting of promos is maybe the number one thing. It is absurd that you have people who don't even know professional wrestling, who were not WWE fans going into it, who literally will script word for word verbiage for people that have been doing this for 10 or 15 years, who know their characters inside out better than anybody else. No, here's a piece of paper. You got to read exactly as it says on the paper. So what do we end up with? We end up with guys on television who sound forced and rehearsed, like they're just trying to, I got to memorize my lines. Shit, I forgot that word. Shit. So instead of actually cutting a promo and believing in what they're saying and evoking some kind of emotion, it's like they're giving a fucking presentation in front of their college class and they've got to remember every line, and then they forget lines and they botch things up. You know, they do that with the legends sometimes. They'll give Bret Hart some stuff to say. Bret Hart's not going to remember a fucking long promo. But if you let him go out there and say, Bret, look, we need you to go out there, hold up the championship belt. These are the two guys that are going to be fighting for it. Here's the date of the pay-per-view. Go out there and sell it. That's all you need. And that's the sort of thing I think that will make that AEW television show a lot more tolerable to watch. It'll feel real. And if people fuck up their lines, well, hey, that's what happens in real life. Some guys just can't speak. Some guys are great at it. Some guys suck. It's not realistic to think that everybody's going to be a great promo on day one. But I'd rather them go out there and be themselves than recite some garbage that some 25-year-old TV soap opera writer wrote for them. Jordan in D.C., you're on the air.
Hey, what's up, Solomon Monster? Happy Memorial Day.
Thank you, sir. Same
Memorial
to you.
Day, well. Yeah, I got a question about Jon Moxley. You know, when he was in WWE, although he was a part of the Shield, which was a big faction, he was always the third wheel. You know, Rollins and Reigns get major chances. He was always the guy that was kind of left out in the dust. Like, I remember at WrestleMania 33, Rollins had a big match against Triple H. Roman headlined against Undertaker, and he was in the pre-show against Baron Corbin. So my question is, do you think he could become a bigger star than those two guys now that he's on his own?
A bigger star in terms of just, like, in terms of wrestling fans? Or you mean like a mainstream star?
I'm talking about kind of like mainstream. Because even Rollins and Roman, I've both seen them on ESPN, on Good Morning America before. I've never seen them there. Do you think he could reach that level?
Yeah, I think he could. Absolutely. Especially now with the TNT tie-in, there's going to be a lot of crossover between the network and the wrestling show. If things take off, if this show does as well as everybody's hoping it does, and there's a lot of expectations for that first show. What are they going to do in terms of viewership? Oh, they're going to do 1 million, 2 million. You know, TNA did 2 million for that 1 3-hour show they did when they went live on Mondays in 2010. I think that if they do somewhere in the range of 500,000 to 1 million, and probably closer to the former than the latter, but somewhere in that range, they ought to be ecstatic. I think it's very unrealistic to think that first show is going to do any more than that. But if they can build an audience, and Ambrose is one of the featured top performers, like he's filming a movie role right now, some kind of an MMA-themed movie that he's going to be off filming, he may be able to get more movie opportunities out of it. And the more that he's on television, and the more that he's featured on TNT, and able to really show us what he's capable of, and not some watered-down version of Jon Moxley, which is one of the things he was most frustrated by in WWE. He thought his character was very hokey, and just was not a fan of it anymore, supposedly. Can he become a bigger star than, let's say, Seth Rollins? I think he can be. I would hesitate to say Roman Reigns, because Roman has just been such a featured guy for so long. And Roman's going to end up doing movies and all the things that The Rock is doing. And I don't know if he'll be as successful as The Rock. And The Rock will probably try to open some doors for him because he is family. I think Roman is still a bigger star, will probably always be a bigger star. But can Ambrose be bigger than he was in WWE, instead of being sort of the redheaded stepchild of the Shield? Yeah, absolutely. Without question. We'll take a couple more calls and then we'll wrap up here. We'll go to, oh, now this person's in Vegas, but apparently he did not actually attend the AEW show, but Oscar, you're on the air.
Hey, what's up, Solid Monster? Happy belated 600, by the way.
Thank you
and,
very much.
Happy Memorial Day.
Thank you.
I have a question. What's it called? I was like watching like how like Jon Moxley was like debuting and stuff, and how the way the crowd like straight up erupt. I felt like I was kind of getting emotional a little bit because of, you know, I was getting some like Attitude Era vibes from the reaction, because I think the last time I've seen a pop that big was probably Stone Cold from Stone Cold Steve Austin back in 99. Like, what you think about it?
Well, I was there live, and I played video of it at the very beginning of the show when I started streaming here today, and it was electric inside the building. And it, I love the way it built. People didn't see him at first. And once people realized, oh shit, someone's coming out of the crowd, they got excited, but they didn't know who it was. Then they saw it was Moxley, and they just went nuts. And it's been a long time since we've seen somebody like, you know, get a reaction like that. It did kind of remind me of some of the things you would see in the Attitude Era when somebody would come out of the crowd on like a Nitro or a Monday Night Raw. So it did kind of take me back to that, and I have a better appreciation for it because I was fortunate enough to be in the building ringside for it, and the place went nuts in a way that I haven't seen in a very long time. So it was as cool or cooler to be there live than it was even on TV. I don't even think the TV version truly did it justice, how loud it was in that building. But I want to stop short of comparing him to Stone Cold. I think that's a terrible thing to do. And it's just a huge, not an insult, but I think it does no favors to Moxley. Because when you start making those comparisons, you know, how does it compare to Stone Cold? Nobody got bigger pops than Stone Cold in the Attitude Era. Yeah, you know, people used to talk about the Road Warrior pop back in the 80s. But Stone Cold was just on another level from everybody else. And one of the biggest stars of all time. Ambrose is not one of the biggest stars of all time. And Ambrose could go on to have great success in AEW, and I still don't think he'll go on to be one of the biggest stars of all time. He just has to be himself. And people have to stop making these comparisons between him and Stone. There was another, I don't know if it's a podcast or what, but they were tweeting some stuff out about how it's like, oh, it's like we've got Stone Cold back. I'm like, no, we don't. You're handicapping this guy. Because all you're going to do is piss people off who are going to turn around and just, now they're just going to talk all this negative crap about Ambrose. He's no Stone Cold. It does him no favors, I think, to make those kinds of comparisons. Stone Cold was Stone Cold. There will never, ever be another Stone Cold Steve Austin. But Ambrose can be the first Ambrose, or Moxley, or whatever the fuck he wants to call himself. He could be a big star. But people need to stop comparing him to somebody else because that doesn't do him any good. Adam in Connecticut, you're on the air.
Hey there, Solomon. Happy Memorial Day. How's it going?
It's going pretty well. You sound like you've had about 5 cups of coffee so far.
Well, that's pretty good enough. I want to ask you a couple of questions. Question number one, what would be the chances that if Impact, like maybe say a Don Callis or a Rosemary join up in All Elite Wrestling, or maybe Impact could team up with All Elite Wrestling? And number two, I would ask you the $64 billion question. You talk about Ring of Honor helping out with the All-In pay-per-view, and All Elite Wrestling did their first pay-per-view very successful. So I ask you this question. Where does Ring of Honor stand of all this?
Well, that's a good question, where Ring of Honor stands, because they're sort of on the outside looking in right now. There's not a whole lot of excitement or buzz for the ROH product at the moment. They're being overshadowed by all this All Elite stuff. And even to a lesser degree, you know, MLW is putting out a great product and generating a little bit of buzz, although they're also kind of being, I think, swallowed up by all this enthusiasm for AEW. Ring of Honor has got to be looking at this, and they have got to be pissed as all hell, because Ring of Honor had Cody, and they had Kenny, and they had the Bucks, and they very clearly helped out with that All-In show. And they had absolutely no idea what they were getting themselves into and what this was going to turn into. Had they had a premonition that this is what would be the end result of that, there is not a snowball's chance in hell is what they would have had, I think, of Ring of Honor helping them out with that first show. Because now, not only is AEW a competitor, but you have got Cody, you've got the Bucks, you've got Kenny, and in due time, believe you me, Marty Scurll will be there as well, all jumping ship over to All Elite Wrestling. And it was Ring of Honor. It kind of reminds me of the story where USA went to Vince McMahon in 2005 and said, hey, do we have your blessing? We want to put this show on after Raw Monday nights called The Ultimate Fighter. And Vince McMahon said, sure. So The Ultimate Fighter became a thing on USA, and that had a very big part in how popular the UFC became. And WWE could deny it until they turned blue in the face, but UFC was and still is competition to WWE. Even though, by all accounts, Vince and Dana White have a pretty decent relationship, And it's not like WWE never mentions UFC on TV, but they're competition. And for a long time, until they struck this deal with ESPN for their pay-per-views, you know, they were competing for pay-per-view dollars before the network came along. And UFC was you know, the hot shit for a long time. If Vince McMahon does not give their blessing to go on the air after Raw Monday nights back in 05, UFC is dead. They're done. That's how close they were to death. And it cannot be understated how important that reality show was to giving them new life. And it was because Vince McMahon said, sure, okay. And that's what this Ring of Honor thing kind of reminds me of. Oh, okay, Cody and them, they want to do this show. And so, all right, we'll help you out. We'll handle the production for you. And well, I think there were even some Ring of Honor guys, I think, who wrestled on that show. But if they had any idea of what this was going to become, there ain't no way that Ring of Honor would have lifted a finger to help these guys. So what must they be thinking watching all of this right now, watching this promotion sprout up and get a big TNT TV deal and all of this excitement? What must they be thinking? Because Ring of Honor is owned by a multi-billion dollar company, but their television, you know, they're syndicated in a lot of markets, but they don't have a big TV deal. They're not on a TNT the way that AEW is going to be. And I don't see the two of them entering into a working agreement either. I think AEW and New Japan probably will. I think they should. AEW and MLW might. There were a lot of MLW talents on this show. On Saturday night, Brian Pillman Jr. was in the Battle Royal. Ace Romero. I saw Teddy Hart at ringside. You know, he wasn't part of the show, but he was there. Tony Schiavone. You know, Tony Schiavone is a contracted announcer for MLW. He was there. He was enjoying the show. MJF has been in MLW before. So I think that they're probably looking at this going, wow, you know, if we had any sense of it, things might have been very different. Let's go to Scott in Minnesota.
Hey, Jason, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. Nice to meet you on Saturday, I think it was, before the show. I was in the wheelchair.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Oh, Scott. Yeah, of course. At the casino. Of course.
Yes.
I'm still glad we were able to bump it. It was just complete happenstance. We were walking in opposite directions.
Yes.
And Scott said something, and I looked down. I said, I knew who it was immediately. So I'm glad we were able to meet on my final day in Vegas.
I don't have a question. I was going to tell you more about Wrestling on the Cruise. They can do TV, but not live. So they'll be able to record it.
All right. Well, that would make sense. That's why I said, you know, logistically, maybe it's not possible for them to go live. But, you know, if they have a tape show that week and they tape maybe not even the entire show, maybe they tape a few matches from the cruise, I don't see why not. I'm pretty sure on that first cruise they had a ring set up. So you set up a ring, you set up a couple of cameras.
They did that. They also had announcing. So, and after with the cruise, I got a code for like the ring or Sea of Honor, as they called it, and watched it on Fight TV.
Well, that's good insight to have. But I absolutely think that they should tape at least some matches, if not an entire show from that ship. I think it's crazy for them not to.
Well, what I think they'd probably do is if it was like the last one, they had wrestling almost every night except for one.
Well, I mean, it is a wrestling cruise, so. Although I shouldn't just say that. It's a combination of wrestling and music. I think Jericho, his band Fozzy performs. So it's not just wrestling, but let's be honest, it's a wrestling cruise.
Yes. And then I was going to give you one piece of advice on going on the cruise. Bring your own toilet paper.
Oh, is that a thing? I didn't know that. was that a thing?
No, it's the toilet paper. The toilet paper is really thin there. So.
Ah, I see. Well, that's actually not very encouraging, considering that I'm going to be on a ship surrounded by a bunch of wrestling fans who are using very thin toilet paper. So now I may have to second-guess my trip out to the high seas here. I appreciate the feedback.
Okay. Well, you have a great rest of your day, sir.
Thank you. You too. That just ruined my day right there. Now I'm kidding. Man, thin toilet paper. I mean, is that a thing on, like, most cruises, or is that just, like, a Jericho cruise thing? I've never heard that before. I've heard people get food poisoning and get sick on these cruises. I mean, I get sick every week watching Raw, but thin toilet paper. I've been to hotels that have like a weak shower head. I've seen that before. Well, on that note, let's go to, we'll go to James in Massachusetts. James, you're on the air.
Hey, what's up, Saul Monster?
I'm doing well.
Hear from you again, and happy Memorial Day.
Happy Memorial Day to you, too. And I think I'm going to have to start asking people to start sending me some thick toilet paper in preparation for this cruise next January.
Yeah, right? Yeah. When I heard that was, like, out of nowhere.
Jeez.
My question, it's like a couple of kind of questions. It's like a two-parter. So there was a lot of AEW wrestlers, especially Dustin and Moxley in particular, saying that Moxley specifically saying they're going to knock the pillars of the wrestling landscape on their ass. And then Dustin basically saying, I got out of Papillon, I got out of prison, and it feels good. And this was during the press conference. It's pretty much everywhere. It's like a major clip from Dustin. My question is this, because another company that a lot of people seem to be kind of unhappy with is Impact, and mainly because of Pursuit. What if Don Callis, this is a huge what if, but what if Don Callis went to Cody and is like, look, let's merge. You can have the Impact assets, and then they have all this talent from Impact. What happens then? You know what I mean? Because I didn't even realize how much talent was on Impact. Like, there's an incredible influx of talent there right now.
They have a lot of talent on that show, and a lot of talent that I recognize and used to watch on Lucha Underground. You know, Johnny Impact, Killer Cross, who I think is going to be a much bigger star than he is now, but not as long as he's in Impact, because just the reach, you know, the reach in the audience just isn't there. And he tried to get out of his contract recently. Apparently, he signed to a multi-year deal, and he was turned down. While they have given releases to other people, they refused to give one to him because, at the end of the day, he signed a contract. And I don't know why you would sign a multi-year contract with Impact, but he did, and so he stuck. But they have, you're right, a lot of talent on that roster. I believe there may have been, there was a rumor anyway, that last year there was an inquiry made, possibly, I think, by Impact, to that effect, about a possible, I don't know if it was like a merger or buying them out or something. And again, this is not anything that's been confirmed. But there may have already been an overture made, and I think AEW and the Khan family just said, no, we're not interested. And why would they be? I mean, they have a lot of great talent, but, you know, do they need to buy Impact? I think they're doing fine on their own. And as contracts come up for expiration, they can pick off the people they want. You know, and some guys may have exclusive deals. Other guys may not. Johnny Impact, he wrestles all over the place. You know, he could be Johnny Elite. Now, maybe he's not under an exclusive deal. Maybe he can go ahead and negotiate with AEW if he wants to. It's a very weird landscape now where some guys can be in one promotion and another, like Brian Pillman in the Battle Royal the other night, even though he's in, MLW as part of the Hart Foundation. But then other guys are exclusive and they can't go anywhere else. It's very confusing. I don't think they need to buy Impact. I don't think they will. I don't think that's going to happen. If they could find a way to strike some kind of working agreement, I think that would be far more beneficial to Impact than it would be to AEW. But I think that would be cool because they have a lot of talent that I'd love to see in All Elite Wrestling. But I think the one working agreement that they should reach, AEW that is, and that I think they will, it's just a matter of time, is with New Japan. Because that's a mutually beneficial relationship. You get Ibushi, Okada, some of those guys in for at least some big matches in AEW. At the same time, New Japan is trying to expand their footprint in this country to get their guys some exposure on a major network like TNT. It's a win-win situation. That's the relationship that I hope can be forged in the next several months. And David, in Chicago, you are on the air.
Hey, Saul Master, how you doing? This is Deathblow David Floyd.
Hey, David, how you doing?
I'm doing good, man. I'm doing good. Just at the gym now before barbecue starts.
Pumping iron.
You know, I just want to say, I just want to say, man, you know, I listened to you for a long time. I'm proud that you got the 600, man. It's really good.
Thank you.
And it was AEW. I'm just happy, man. I'm in a happy space because, you know, the different options in WWE, especially Raw, SmackDown the past couple of weeks and stuff. And I really feel like there's something different, you know?
Yeah, and then that's the key. That really, at the end of the day, the key is that it's different. Because you can't be WWE light. TNA tried that. They failed. It didn't work. You know, the time that Impact felt like something truly special and different is back when they first had their X Division and everything was sort of built around the X Division. And then they slowly got away from that. And And look, I get it. You want to bring in some big names. They brought in Sting. They brought in Kurt Angle. And that's fine. But then they brought in Hogan and Flair and Foley and Booker and Nash and on and on and on and on and on. And it's like, you know, come on. You know, are you just WWE light, or are you going to do your own thing? And they kind of got away, I think, from what brought them to the dance. Jeff Hardy, I mean, I could go through all the names that they brought in over the years, which is why I think AEW just has to be a lot more selective in who they bring in. But this has been fun, guys. I really appreciate the support, the super chats, everybody who donated tonight. I'm going to go through the list as soon as we're off the air here, but I thank you for that. I thank you for tuning in. I got a way bigger audience here for a holiday in the middle of the day than I thought I would get. So hopefully we'll be back in business next weekend, normal time. Show will be pushed out to the feed as normal next Sunday. That's episode 602. I am going to take the audio later today from this show. This show will be pushed out to the feed as well, so you'll be able to stream it and download it in iTunes and Stitcher and Spotify and all of the usual places, iHeartRadio. So that'll be going out a little bit later today. You can always email me questions as well for the mailbag segments, thesolomonster@gmail.com. Follow me on Twitter, @solomonster is my handle on there. Please hit the sub button. We're almost at 50,000 subs here on the channel. You guys are awesome. We're very, very close, tantalizingly close right now. And hopefully in the next week. I'd love to be able to break that number in the next week or so. So definitely hit that button as well. I'm all out here on the show. That's my Double or Nothing review, episode 601 of the books. I'm going to get out of here and try to enjoy some of the holiday. I hope you will, too. Have a fantastic Memorial Day for those of you who are celebrating and barbecuing and hanging out with family. And tonight, Monday Night Raw, going to be very interesting to see if there's anything different at all about the show tonight, if there's any mentions of anything in particular by the commentators, any little cheap shots or digs. If I were them, I just focus. I say the same thing about AEW. Focus on your own. Focus on making your own show better before you start taking pot shots at the other product. Some unsolicited advice. Do with it what you will. I'll see you guys soon. Take care.
The Solomonster sounds off.
EC3 lost to Tyler Breeze. I tweeted, that sounds like something you would put on the tombstone of your career. They never should have called him up in the first place if they had no plans for him. I haven't seen a career fade this fast since Jussie Smollett.
The Solomonster sounds off. Available wherever you hear podcasts, including iTunes, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Stitcher, and more.
Want more content?
Visit youtube.com/thesolomonster for sound off extras and more. And follow the Solomonster on Twitter @Solomonster.
Solomonster.
Solomonster.
Put that cigarette out.
Solomonster sounds off.